Yeah, I know. I don't have my backup. Matt, would you like to give us that information on the ECA, please?
Madam Chair, during lunch, I went back and calculated the $24 million, what's attributable to the increase or the decrease in assessed valuation. For fiscal year 14, that was the only year that the assessed valuation changed for the January Craig. By it going down, it increased the entitlement payments to the state by $8 million. So $16 million for the biennium is due to the enrollment increase that we're projecting. That's a biennial, Madam Chair, it's a biennial number.
The $16 million.
Right.
Okay.
Now, on the revenue side, when assessed valuation goes down, it also reduces your revenue from recapture districts. And for fiscal year 14, that was a decrease of $14 million. That's not in the $24 million number because that's on the appropriation side. But when you see Craig in a little bit, you'll notice the revenue change, and that $14 million is a part of that. So just tie everything together.
Does that help the committee? Thank you, Matt. Okay, Mr. Hansen, where were we?
I believe we finished with 4503, and we're now on 4504. And, Madam Chair, 4503, the CTE demonstration project, 4505, distance education grant, and 4506, summer school, at one time were separate units in the department's budget. A couple of bienniums ago, they were moved into 4101 and funded under 4101. This year, at the suggestion of LSO, we readily agreed that they really need to be separate units for you to review each year. So it's not new money. It's the same programs. They're just laid out for you to see. And again, we've talked about the increase to summer school 4506 and the $13.5 million. And so that's all we had to talk about with those three budgets.
Committee, does anyone going back have any questions on the career technical 4506?
Madam Chair.
Matt?
I have one comment on this. And as I mentioned earlier, I put about a $5 million increase in there for a shortfall for this current biennium. Some of the shortfall comes from the fact that some of this funding in our projections is just only for the school district grants. Some of this expenditure out of this unit is for the administration of the program, and that's a reason for the shortfall. It might be prudent for the department to either put that in a separate unit for the administration of this program instead of having to come back for more money. It's our intent, and I think the calculation's intent, for this to be just for sole school district grants. And if there is a cost of administration, then that needs to be identified and funded. But that's one reason why there was a shortfall for this biennium.
Okay. Other comments on that? Okay, good. Thank you, Matt. Mr. Hansen, did you have anything?
We'll get with LSO on that issue.
Great. Thank you.
All right, Madam Chair, the next section belongs under the heading of education reform. We start on page 34 with the student assessment budget, and this is, as our narrative says, this is the amount for PAWS. So I believe the committee would like to have an in-depth analysis of this, where we've been, where we're going with it, and we're prepared to first visit with you about the assessment contracts and then delve into these numbers here. And the thing that the committee, the hard thing for us to get our arms around is this. The contracts are for 4 years, covering three assessments. Therefore, they span three bienniums. So we start off with an appropriation at the beginning of a biennium, and that appropriation covers the last assessment, and we got the next one coming in front of us. It's very complicated. So Greg Hansen has prepared for you, and it's your number 142.
Okay. Great. Here it is. Okay. Everyone find that.
Yeah. And it
just was handed out.
It might be best if you could go to the second page first so you can see the timelines on here. Greg, you want to talk about the timelines on page two first?
You want to put your mic on.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'm Greg Hansen. It's a pleasure to be before your committee today.
Thank you.
If you've all found the contract timeline sheet there, on this sheet I've tried to visually represent the contracts. The blue line in the top left corner represents the Harcourt contract, which is the prior pause. The green line down below represents the Pearson contract. That contract started December 2nd, 2008, and it runs to December 2nd, 2012, so it isn't quite finished yet. The red line in the middle of your page represents the bienniums, so I attempted to show that this contract covers multiple bienniums, and then as you look through this, you'll see the dollar amounts that were spent from different appropriations, and the arrows lead you to which contract those went to. So in the 09 biennium, there was $18 million appropriated. Of that, $11 million went to Harcourt to finish that contract, and $6 million went to the current paused contract. As we head from left to right, you will see that the federal funds spent down right above the green line there is $4,700,000 so far on pause. As we move over to the 2011 biennium, there was another $18 million appropriated. So far to date, we have spent $9 million of that on the current pause. Or Pearson, sorry. Don't want to confuse you all. The very next line is the amount encumbered. And we have identified both the remainder of the 2011 appropriation to pay for the remainder of the Pearson contract, as well as some more federal dollars. And by doing that, we have identified all the funds necessary to finish the contract, even though the contract extends into the next biennium. And I will try to answer any questions you might have. Certainly.
Any questions? Go ahead, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Looking at your timeline, I guess walk me through the math, what you're showing us here on the middle biennium on your timeline again, just so I can understand where the $18 million is and where the extra dollars came from.
Madam Chair, Representative, certainly, as just for clarification purposes, we're speaking of the 2011 biennium?
Yes, Madam Chairman.
Okay.
Beginning 7-1-2010.
Certainly. Of that $18 million, so far we have spent $9 million on the current Pearson contract. The remainder of that $18 million is rolled into the $10 million amount encumbered. And if you go to the first page of my handout, on the contract financial analysis chart or box, the second part of that box identifies the specific amounts encumbered. You have $8.9 million encumbered in the 4601, which is the $18 million that we're talking about. And then you have $200,000 in 6373, which is a federal budget, and another $1.2 in 6373, which is the next year of that federal budget.
You know, this, your dilemma is quite common throughout. I mean, if you go down to, for example, the Secretary of State, they've got contracts out that span multiple periods of time, and there are overlaps that take place, so that's pretty common. When you, and I think we're using the wrong terms in terms of amount encumbered. The dollars encumbered for, once they're encumbered for a specific contract, that's really more of a capital construction term of art. So if you're building a building and we authorize a building to be contracted, that, or to be constructed with $10 million that's going to span a construction cycle throughout multiple bienniums, then we encumber those dollars until they're spent. What I think would typically happen, and the appropriate is, first of all, when you enter into contracts like the Pearson contract, those contracts are provided by law to say they're subject to appropriated monies. So if tomorrow the legislature defunded it, you're not encumbered because the contract has an out provision for failure for lack of money. So all services contracts have a provision subject to legislative appropriation. So what should happen in this instance is if the amount that the standard budget should be in somewhat irrelevant. The at the beginning of the biennium, so at 2011, you know exactly what payments you're going to make. And you should be putting that into your budget message. So you say during the 2011, we have $10 million of payments to make. That should be your request for appropriation. And then when you move forward to the 2013 budget, you got a couple of years missing here, but for each fiscal year you say this is amount we're budgeted to spend. And it should be actual dollars based upon your actual expected payments during that biennium. And we're not going to encumber monies for 2013, you're blank there. We wouldn't do that. And when that budget comes up, we budget it then. But your budget is built by your actual dollars. And the standard budget, the Chapter 11 process, should be ratcheted to the actual dollars that you are required to spend for that there. And then when you move forward, you say, okay, our actual payments are $10 million plus X dollars on contract one, and on contract two, it's X dollars, and you put that in your narrative as an exception request to either take it up or down. So you're budgeting, what I'm trying to say in some sense is that the standard budget is irrelevant the standard budget is irrelevant for us, say, a 900 series or for a contracted amount. What you're doing is saying, we know what our payments are going to be. Now, if you don't know what your payments are going to be and you're asking for a SWAG, you say we need to have a budget of this amount authorized to use for this purpose, and we can do that too. But for all practical purposes, the in this budget for 13 to 14, what we're looking for is exactly what are your payments that you have to make during the biennium and when. And you put that in your narrative, and that becomes your exception budget. It may be higher or lower than the standard budget. Let me go back to our staff and see if I said that right.
Madam Chair, Senator Nichols, I think you're right. The tough part with the 13-14 biennium is that they're entering negotiations with a new contract or a new vendor under a new contract. They don't know what the cost is going to be. And so that's a little difficult for them to identify what the new contract amount is.
Well, as long as, I mean, in that case, you're trying to budget in what your best guess is. I mean, and at this point, if you're in negotiation, you ought to be able to peg it pretty well. This is what we think it's going to be. And then if you run short, you ask for an exception next year.
Madam Chair, Senator Nichols, you're describing our process. In July, when we put this budget together, we had not contracted for the new assessment. And so it was a SWAG. It was the $18 million as a placeholder. And we're going to come back to you as soon as we know what the exact payments are going to be over the biennium, and we'll ask for an up or down to the budget at that time. And if for some reason...
But if you know more information between September and now, we expect it to be updated. So if you have an actual number, you ought to be replugging the numbers in.
And Madam Chair, yes, we understand that, and we understand what we're to bring you back on the callback.
Okay. And then now there is the second issue that we've talked about, we'll talk about later, and that is if there's a savings reduction on an appropriated item has appropriated out of two sides of a budget, and whether you get to reduce the standard or your essentially, I'd say your foundation program account or the federal dollars, that's the discussion we had. That's a little bit different discussion, but we've already talked about that.
Right, and that'll be in the analysis, Madam Chair.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think maybe just to build on that last point a little bit, in your timeline, you're mentioning the $18 million that's appropriated, but you fail to mention the federal component that was appropriated. So we can look at your total budget for this. I mean, I have that page open right here where that $7.3 million in federal dollars is not profiled on your timeline here. And just to fill in the blanks, when I look at this, it appears to me that you're spending the state dollars first and then carrying over some federal dollars. And that's my question. It seems like you get to a certain point where everything is spent, but the timing of it, are you spending state dollars first and federal dollars second?
Greg or Fred?
Yeah, who wants to take that?
I can take a stab at it, Madam Chair. In regards to that question, what my timeline was attempting to show was the amounts that we have paid in the past, and it is true that the $7 million is not on here. As far as which dollars are spent first, we could do the analysis to show that. It would be... With federal funds, it's a little tough because we get a new appropriation every July. So some of those dollars may get spent as the time for the federal funds runs out. Then we would want to spend those older dollars first. So it is a little tough for me to speak to directly.
Another way to say the same question is, our expectation is that you would exhaust your federal funds first at as rapid a pace as you can before you draw on our revenues.
Mr. Hansen.
Madam Chair, that is our practice. We would exhaust the federal funds first.
Okay. I see other heads shaking yes to that, too. So, okay. And Representative Stewart, would you like to follow up?
Well, I would love to see that, how you approach that in some sort of a timeline, if that would be possible.
Sir. Madam Chair, that is possible.
Great. Thank you, Greg. All right. What's any further questions? Okay, let's continue.
All right. Now, Madam Chairman, the next budget is 4603, WD Priority Programs, and these are our three exception requests for ongoing programs, educational-type programs. The first you'll see is the Native American Education Conference, and Dr. Holbrook will explain this exception request to you.
Dr. Holbrook?
Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, in 2008, the Wyoming Department of Education began an initiative on the Wind River Indian Reservation, which is now expanding to the rest of the state, to bring a focus on education for our Native American students by trying to develop a community government education partnership that's called the Wyoming Tribal Children's Triad. Began with community meetings to try to determine what some of the needs were, what were the perceived needs by the folks who are involved in education and the parents and community members for education on the reservation and now beyond. The results of that were we have a community partnership of around 30 different education, government, and tribal agencies that work together, meet bimonthly, and are focusing on different goals related to education. The first goals that were looked at were to improve attendance and enrollment. What we have done to also is it was noted that there had not been a education-related conference for Native Americans in Wyoming in a long time. And we began the annual Wyoming Native American Education Conference. First meeting was in August 2010, and then in October 2011, just a few months ago, we had our second annual conference. Attendance at the first conference was around 200, and that included parents, teachers, and other educators. This year, in October, we had over 400 people in attendance. It's been very popular, something that has really helped bring a focus on education-related issues, and it's something that the community would really like to continue. We've been, because it was a new initiative with the triad work, we had been using some federal money and some state money to see this happen. The school districts also helped fund the Native Ed Conference, and we have a contractor on the reservation who is the point person for the Wyoming Tribal Children's Triad and also the coordinator for the conference. With the reduction in federal funds that we've seen and with the fact that some of the money that we've used that was federal money was one-time professional development grants that are no longer available, we're requesting, I believe it's $130,000 to continue the contract for our point person on the reservation, as well as to fund the deficit or the remaining amount of money that we need for the Wyoming Native American Education Conference.
Okay, any questions on that? Okay. Thank you. Continue.
Madam Chair, then the next exception request is found on page 38 under Section 5, School Safety. And this is a $250,000 exception request. $50,000 would continue the WE-TIP hotline, and $200,000 would be allocated to districts in the form of grants to address character education anti-bullying. And the governor has approved the $50,000 one. We're making a very sincere plea for the committee to consider funding the $200,000 for us for grants to the school districts for character education and anti-bullying.
Questions? You can continue. Thank you.
All right. The third exception request in this budget is for $220,000 for the Principal Academy. Now, I believe we started in on this and then we stopped. Madam Chair, would you like to have a more detailed explanation of this Principal's Academy?
I think Mr. Hansen will just have that incorporated in the report that you bring back to us next week.
Okay.
Thank you.
Then page budget 4604, starting on page 41, is the wind infrastructure budget. And this is the computers, hardware, software replacement schedule approved by the OCIO for this particular agency, agency 205, and the dollar figure is $27,353 for three DNS servers in a master-slave configuration, and that's the extent of my knowledge on that.
That's fine. Mr. Waters continued that amount of knowledge yesterday with us on
this
program.
All right, very good.
So
very
we
good.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
All right. Then if there's no questions on the wind infrastructure budget, we'll move to 4608 on page 44, which is the wind distance education budget. And, again, it's got the governor's changes to the 400 series and no other changes on that budget. Then that moves us. If I may, Madam Chair, it moves us to the next budget, which is 4702, found on page 49, the WISE implementation. And we have a small change from the governor on the 400 series. And we have a three large but well-thought-out exception requests dealing with the WISE implementation program.
Okay. And Mr. Wilmarth, do you want to speak on this?
Madam Chair, before the department gets in here, the governor denied all three of these. However, in his budget profile for the school foundation program, he put a line item of $3 million for data and teacher licensure online system. And if you remember back in November when Dave and I were here talking at ECA, there was also a report on data, and I think there's a Section 300 in works to kind of bring some of this funding into the budget. So just to kind of put that on your guys' radar, there are some, even though these were denied by the governor, he still put $3 million in his fiscal profile for some type of data work in the Department of Ed and so forth, PTSB. And I think we'll see a Section 300 for the budget to kind of move some of this along.
Right. And Matt, I see that at the very bottom of page 54, his intent to profile that, and I do recall in his speech.
Madam Chair, just to add one more thing. This kind of ties into the Select Education Accountability Committee's work on the statewide longitudinal data system and so forth. So we were going to put it in that bill's appropriation, but I think we're going to come through a Section 300 on that.
Okay, questions on this? Representative Edmonds?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just so make sure I understand this, Matt. So he put it in his budget, $3 million, denied this one. Was that because he's waiting for legislative action? Is that what's going on?
Madam Chair, Representative Edmonds, that's correct. He didn't know exactly what the legislature's intent was on the statewide longitudinal data system, on how they wanted to move that forward, and so forth. So he denied it, put $3 million in his profile, and wanted the legislature really decide through the Select Accountability Bill or through other action to deal with this.
Representative Edmonds and then Mr. Jones.
Oh, do you want to go
let
ahead?
Me,
you
go yeah, ahead let me do that first. Go ahead.
Madam Chairman, Representative Edmonds, the governor is very, very supportive of this, of both of these efforts, the state longitudinal data system, the online teacher certification efforts. He knew there was interim efforts going on to address both of these issues. He wasn't quite sure what specific solutions might be identified might come out of those efforts. He profiled the money because he wants to see these items addressed in some fashion and wants to work with the legislature to implement those solutions. So that's why he allocated money within the context of the profile. With respect to the three requests in here, he was not sure how these may or may not fit into that ultimate solution that's identified. He didn't really take a position. He denied them simply because he wanted to see what that solution would look like in the end.
Go ahead. Follow up, Amy.
Just a quick follow-up, because I should be following accountability closer. Have we had discussions on where it's going to go, or is it settling back at the Department of Ed? I mean, is this a discussion that's ongoing?
Matt?
Madam Chair, Representative Edmonds, we're going to decide that, I think, next week through a draft legislation. I think Monday our committee meets, and then they'll send the bill to JEC on Tuesday. So we'll kind of know where the committee is going to head with that on next week.
Would you like to respond?
Madam Chair, I would. Thank you. What I intend to do with your time today is hopefully fill in any informational gaps we have and then answer any questions that you have. This budget exception request is composed of three parts. There's a unified computing system, an educator licensing system, and your WISE data reporting system. If I could, all three of those requests, business cases have OCI approval, and if I'll go into brief details and then open it up. But I read the governor's comments in the budget, and I want to make sure that we're viewing this all the same way.
Sure.
The unified computing system is a piece of hardware. It could support SLDS, State Longitudinal Data System. It's not necessarily for it. There are a number of reasons we need that. Basically, we're at capacity of our system. The analogy I've drawn is that we have a 10-pound sack and we have 15 pounds of potato. We have, depending on which metrics we look at, we're running between 65 and 92% capacity. Industry standard is usually when you hit 80% capacity, you need to start planning expansion. So we're in a mode right now where we can maintain, and we're good there right now. But House Bill 127, for example, is something that would push us over that 92% mark and gives us concerns. So this is something that would help us go to a virtual environment, a 64-bit system. Other reasons right now that we wouldn't be able to grow into the capacity that we in this room envision. The other aspect is the educator licensing system, the online renewal system for PTSB, House Bill 127. It's an integral part to moving them to an electronic system, get away from paper-based. I have a lot of detail. I'm not sure what level we need here, but I could update you on where we're at in that process if you so desire. Till then, the third aspect is what we call our WISE data system. This is the system that we use to connect with all the districts.
Right.
That vertically all the districts report to us, and we report vertically to the feds and horizontally district to district. This is a system that was designed about 6 years ago, due for an upgrade. In addition, we're not in maintenance mode of that system yet. Every time we have a change request, every time we have a new data request, we're still in change request mode, and that's expensive. Those expenses have gone up. We have envisioned a way to reduce data burdens of the districts, but we have met some hurdles with our existing system. We'd like to remove those hurdles or one way negotiate them and get over them. Now, I'll go into as much detail as you want, but I'll open it up to questions.
Okay. Committee, any questions? I guess we're good for the moment. we did have a little bit of discussion yesterday, too, so on that.
Very good. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much.
All right. Madam Chair, that concludes our Agency 205 presentation. And
you know, Madam Chair, before we leave this wise implementation,
yep.
Just a quick question. You have these three priorities, one, two, three, and I guess as I look at these, see how the money's going to roll out, number one is still number one for you. I see some heads nodding. And then I guess about two and three is my question. If we had enough money to do one of those, is it still in that order, two and three? It seemed like online teacher certification would come after this, the data we're trying to get with the WISE data system. Any comments on that? Or?
Madam Chair, Representative Harshman. Number one priority is still number one priority. Without that, it makes it extremely difficult to accomplish any of the others. I think the reason the PTSB educator licensing system wound up priority number two as opposed to number three was simply because of the attention that House Bill 127 was receiving at the time. If we need to accomplish that, it's good legislation. We should do it. In order to do that, we'll need a funding source. I don't know of another alternative there. It's hard for me. The WISE system is kind of my baby, and it's hard for me to say it's number three, but I'd say it's distant to whatever number four is.
And just to go back, Representative Harshman, on PDSB, if I remember correctly, we've invested quite a bit in order to get the licensing and certification up to date with PTSB, and so it had been advised to us that we continue so that we do not get that backlog. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that's precisely correct. There was quite an effort to take a room full of paper files and put them in a source that's queryable, that's usable. And we've had a couple projects over the past couple summers to do that. We'd certainly not like to waste that effort and keep that going in a way that's maintainable. PTSB at their peak receives 73 phone calls an hour. I believe that's the number, right?
Is that correct? Really? Every day of a working week?
At their peak.
At their peak, okay.
I'm sorry, I'm going to defer to Terry Sexton with PTSB. Help me out.
Use Senator Peterson's mic right there since you're in the corner.
Yes, I'm in the corner.
And identify yourself.
My name is Andrea Bryant, and I'm the program consultant for the Professional Teaching Standards Board. Last year, from the summer of 2009 to the summer of 2010 to the summer of 2011, we received 18,000 incoming phone calls, and we have 8 staff. During that time period, we're actually short-staffed by about 2 people for the majority of the year. So when you calculate it out, even if we were fully staffed that whole time, each one of our staff was spending 22 8-hour working days a year on the phone for incoming phone calls. That has nothing to do with the outgoing phone calls of returning all of the voicemails that got left while they were on the phone. So we're really hoping that this educator licensing system increases our communication capacity with our clients so that they can get their answers to their questions online instead of having to make that phone call.
Ms. Bryant, can you just give us a couple of examples of what are the predominant questions or inquiries?
A lot of the main problem that we have right now is that educators cannot tell the specific status of their application online. So they can see that we have received their application online, but they don't know if something's missing or if there is a particular problem or if the file is under review by our director because of a background hit. In the new system, they would actually be able to see everything that was missing prior to submitting their application, and then once everything was fully complete, then they would push the submit button, and then at that point, we would be able to process it much more quickly. And during that time of processing, if there has to be it routed to another person for review, they would be able to see that it's with that particular person.
Good. Madam And if you'd like to comment, please identify yourself. And
Teresa Sexton, Professional Teaching Standards Board. I would also like to comment that a lot of the calls that do come in are related to our online renewal system, which was implemented as sort of an off-the-shelf system for several of the licensing boards. And because of the nature of the delivery of that system, it's cumbersome, and they have a lot of difficulty sometimes setting up their account and those kinds of things. And we field quite a few phone calls in regards to that as well. And the new educator licensing system would integrate that renewal system. It would be a whole new renewal system that would be a part of that entire licensing system, which would eliminate a lot of those phone calls and questions and that very time-consuming walking them through the process of renewal. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Committee, other questions? Senator Nicholas.
Remind me, what's the acronym for the WISE?
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, stands for the Wyoming Integrated System for Education.
What is the backbone of that system right now as it exists with the current funding?
Madam Chair, the backbone, if I understand your question correct, Senator Nicholas, actually runs on the WEN infrastructure.
I mean, that was poorly asked. What? Tell me, I've got the narrative here, but just tell me in your own words, what are you doing with your present budget and your present, really, 900 series that's got an enormous, you've got $1.8 million in 901 series. What do you use that for?
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, there are, specifically the 900 series, there are three primary vendors we use. Pearson Data Solutions, which was formerly EduStructures, handles our zone integration servers and our SIF-enabled collections. That's the school interoperability framework. That's a way for districts to, instead of pull their data out of their system into a spreadsheet and organize it the way we need it, is basically push-button solution, where the data can automatically be sent vertically or even horizontally for all the schools that are SIF-enabled.
In layman's term, that's you've got a contract to maintain the software program that allows the school district to do all the reporting to the state. Is that?
Madam Chair, yes. There is a solution that allows them to do the majority of their reporting to the state. Some districts choose not to use SIF, and that's by and large based on how large their district is. You know, if it's easier to pull it out, if there's two pieces of data they need to report, sometimes it's easier to do it manually. The other two vendors, to continue with the first question, is ESP Solutions. They handle actual receipt of the data. They validate the data based on rules that are provided by our department to make sure that we don't have students reported in multiple districts, for example. The largest aspect of that 900 series is Choice Solutions. They handle the WISER, it's the student identification number, okay, the WISER IDs. They allocate those. There's also a directory management structure behind it. There's the Fusion portal that they manage. The big project we're working on right now, and I'm glad you asked because it's a pretty cool project, is ART. It's the assessment resource tool. Right now it's difficult for districts to see their data. We want a way to get that data back to the classroom level faster. That's what we're building. Phase one is released right now. We'll have phase two released sometime this spring, and phase three next year. So far, received good reviews from the districts.
all of these contracts are scheduled to continue through this biennium?
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, they are. I wouldn't mind kicking around the idea of seeing what else is out there and putting it out for bid. That's preliminary thought right now. I mentioned some of the hurdles we had before to accomplish things we want to do. But the current plan is that they continue, correct?
So you've got an ongoing obligation just to meet the WISER implementation of $1.8 million. And then in going back through your requests, I think I understand each one of them. The priority number one request was, is that simply the implementation of the PTSB data into a database so that we can find out, ultimately that will connect to and provide the capacity to look at teachers and their grade scores and all their data, and later we can tie that to classroom performance?
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, that is correct. That's not the only reason why that UCS is needed, but it would definitely support that. Mm-hmm. Moving that data over to that system is the proverbial straw, the last straw. The other two requests, by the way, although that one pertains to SLDS, the other two requests actually are separate.
Let's do one at a time.
Okay.
With respect to the priority number one and the goal to further support the PTSB computerization, how did you go about building that budget amount? Create a budget, or did you just do a swag?
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, my recollection is that it was, I think we sat down collectively. We have a business analyst with the department that's been working with PTSB, sat down to collect requirements of the system, what that would look like. From there, we built the cost of each one of those steps and rolled it up.
All right. Now, that is something that the – pardon me.
Mr. Co-Chair, part of that sit-down happened with Drew's predecessor, and so I will provide a little bit of information regarding that. We did sit down initially when we were tasked with coming up with a system that would do this. ITD, who supports our information needs, they were the ones that built our online renewal, and they had thrown out the figure of $1 million. It would take at least $1 million to build this. We had also spoken with a couple of other states who built similar systems, and HUP Enterprises, which is one of the people who responded to the RFI and is one of the companies that we're looking at. Initially, theirs was $2 million to build, and I think it was Alabama, but I'm not 100% sure. Theirs was so high in Alabama because that was the first one they did, but the cost looked like $1 million for us, being one of, I think we would have been the seventh state if we choose HUP to do that. So their costs have come down since then, but the two initial sort of ballpark figures we got were over $1 million. We also we worked with the OCIO's office, with the OCIO, and they indicated that it would be a very good idea for us to have a business analyst who would help us to implement the system correctly. And another piece of that budget is the roughly $130,000 to support that position just for implementation. Right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Chair.
So it sounds like there is some sort of a budget that was put together. I hope there was. Going back to the committee meeting this coming Monday, actually, isn't it? This coming Monday, I guess what we ought to do is, to the extent that you have a budget that created the 960, put it together, present it to the select committee. I guess it'd be on Monday, make sure they see it, and then we'll decide whether we can talk to those co-chairs to see whether they want to tackle it in the bill or do it here. That next issue.
Co-chairman, Mr. Jones.
Madam Chairman, Mr. Chairman, there are specific business cases that were submitted for all three of these, so there should be sufficient additional specific detail available for you to look at.
All right. Well, the next item is the online teacher certification. Now, that one, I'm not sure. Was the committee actually looking at that as well? Matt, I don't remember whether we actually looked at that issue.
Mr. Chairman, we asked the select committee if they wanted to put an appropriation. They deferred back to you guys to do a Section 300.
Well, I don't mind doing the appropriation side. What I don't want to do, though, is lose the connectivity between what's being asked to be completed versus...
Matt's here.
What's in the scope?
Madam Chair, Senator Nichols, you know, one thing we can do is we've been running numbers. We can see if those jive to complete the requests or the priorities in this budget exception request. We can get back to you to make sure the Section 300, how it's structured, will accomplish these priorities.
And be aligned with the committee.
Correct, Mr. Madam Chairman.
Well, let's do that. Let's on Monday maybe we coordinate it where there's a presentation with respect to these items, what's being asked for, what the right direction, and put it in front of the committee for the scope. And then that if we talk to the committee upstairs about the scope of the work and make sure it embodies what's wanted, then you provide us the business case for the dollar amounts, and we can take it up during markup. But I'm more interested in, I'm not thinking in that, you know, by Monday, I suppose, if I read through our materials, then we'll be better off, and maybe the co-chairs will go up during the presentation on this issue, but that scope ought to be covered with the other committee, don't you think?
Yeah. Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, I don't know that it will be shared with them based upon them deferring it back to you, to your committee.
Well, let's talk to them about at least having, let's take these pages, copy them for the committee, present the scope to them, and make sure that they're aware of the scope of the work and see if it sounds right. Because as I understand what you're doing here, is all the scope of all of this work is to implement those bills, right?
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, that's exactly right. This is all driven by legislation in the 2011 session.
So then the question is whether we have we're creating duplication, redundancies, or waste in what you're already doing compared to what we're asking you to do. How do we know that we're not getting either redundancy or waste?
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, it's prudent to ask that question. That was actually one of my concerns coming up here, that to fill in any informational gaps. The information that's been provided so far sounds like all these things go to SLDS. That's not the case. They're really completely separate, all except for priority number one, which go to support that, but the other ones are removed from it.
How do we know then? I mean, is the notion that these are going to be three separate requests going out, or are they going to be three requests? Are you going to? I suppose you could do it two ways. You could do it three different requests, or you can put them requests at the same time and say do joint, combined, integrated, whatever.
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, that's from some financial advice that we had received that we should combine them into a single request. I think they should be evaluated individual merit. I can't speak educated as to why they were rolled up into one, but it may be somewhat academic at this point.
How tuned in is the CIO into these three projects, and the nitty-gritty.
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, fully aware. We've been working with the...
I'm not awareness. How tuned in is he? I mean, how deep does he understand the... And can he... Does he know everything you're doing and everything that's in here, or is he just doing a... Or their office sort of doing a stand-back analysis?
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, he is attuned to what we are, to what the plan is. I believe there are some specific educational processes that we have that office simply doesn't have the exposure to. As far as the hardware and the technology goes, it all makes sense. But as far as how it's used and what the purpose is and how it draws the link between the WDE and the districts and who those district players are, there's a lot of moving parts there.
To what extent have our consultants and which consultants, I guess the question, did you get input from our consultants on these three topics and which ones, which consultants?
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, you're asking if we received consultation on the three priorities from our vendors?
Yeah, the three projects.
The three projects.
No, from our consultants on the accountability consultants.
That would be heaviest on the WISE system. That's the things we have planned. This is, we want to make sure that they fit with the frameworks they have. So that's where we have sought consultation from them, priority number three. Priority number one.
Which ones?
I'm sorry, priority number three is the WISE.
No, I mean, which consultants? Well, you're talking your vendor.
I am.
You went to your existing vendor on the last element.
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, that's, by and large, that's true. In order to say we've got a new data collection, this is what we want to do, that we have some new business rules around it, what does that mean to us? That conversation is pretty organic. So, you know, if we go out to rebid, I wouldn't be seeking to...
We're two ships passing in the night.
Must be.
We've got David Cedar, we've got... Pikus and Auden are consultants that we've hired in the accountability. Have any of those consultants looked at your scope of work?
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, not to my knowledge. No, if that conversation happened at a different level, it's...
What consultants are going to be in town tomorrow?
On Monday.
On Monday.
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, that'll be our accountability consultants, Dr. Scott Marion and Dr. Chris Domoleski.
How about Cedar?
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, Dr. Cedar won't be in town.
Have any of those consultants looked at this work to see where it embodies the work that they think needs to be done?
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, to respect, I think the only one is priority number two, which is the PTSB request for the online certification system. That's the only one I believe that's been looked at by any of our state consultants regarding the school finance.
What do you think about turning over the business case and this to our consultants to review while they're here and maybe going out to Cedar? I guess it would be Cedar. Who would be the one on?
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, I'm not sure. You know, that one's a little bit more technical on the data structure side. I'm not sure if we have a consultant that could look at that and provide a response to that. We can follow up. Another source we can talk to the OCIO and get his information or his response on
let's do on this. Let's at least get these requests out to all of our consultants, ask them what input they think they can provide to us. Let's get the CIO in it. On a call back, we'll show this to the committee, describe what we're doing, but let's get some feedback with respect to dollar amounts and scope, and part of my concern is, as we go out to an RFP process, that we're building
what we are looking to build and that we have all the expertise getting us there.
Andrea? Go ahead.
Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, I just wanted to clarify that Dr. Cedar has been involved in the process at every step along the way. He's had the opportunity to review the business case, the RFI. We've had communications with him pretty much every step of the way, and he's had a chance to review and hasn't provided a lot of comment, so we take that to mean that they're in agreement in the direction that we're moving.
What I might want to do, I mean, maybe we ought to get him on the phone and talk to us, get comments in terms of, and we could maybe do that during the markup process, see if he'll, or maybe we can just have him talk to our staff. We'll figure that out over time, but I guess the these are all pretty important issues, and I think they need to move forward, obviously, and we just need to figure out how we're going to make sure that we get the product we're wanting and who's involved, whether our staff's going to be involved in two, whether it's going to be your deal or what. And so I'd like to hear from our consultants what their recommendations are.
I agree, Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair. Also, I would like to comment that that was part of the reason why we went to RFI. Initially, we were just going to do an RFP, and the CIO's office recommended that we definitely do an RFI so that we could then take that information from the RFI and integrate
that into
the RFP.
Something you're going to do or have done?
It's already out. Yeah, we've already gotten our responses to the RFI. And so that information, we can sort of pick and choose from the information we've gotten there to make the system that we're getting the best one that we can possibly get.
Now, on those responses, has Cedar looked at those too? Is he getting those?
We just got those. And so our two team members, Andrea and Mike Webster, have reviewed them the week before last. And we're still in the process of reviewing the RFI.
Was it your plan to give that information to him? Or?
As soon as they get a chance to sort of look it over, it was sort of we'll make recommendations and here's why, and then he'll have a chance to look at all of them and then look at why we recommend and see whether there's agreement there or not.
Okay, Madam Chairman, I think we can get our hands around this. We can do
Good.
It between now and
markup. Good. And Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just a really quick question on the item number three. Since I'm still not clear exactly. I mean, I know the good chairman now wants to involve the consultants. As I read this narrative, these changes, some of them are driven by Senate File 70, which
right.
we've already passed, and is legislation. So what are we waiting for? I mean, is there something that's going to happen in the accountability committee that the rest of the legislature is not aware of? Or why? I'm still unclear as to why $3 million parked by the governor. The Department of Ed wasn't drawn into this discussion. And now, in January of 2012, the Appropriations Committee is asking for this. I would like to know the timeline and the discussion and where we're headed with this.
I'm the same way. I can't answer that. What I do know is that we've had these hearings on accountability, and the targets is shifting based upon where the bill's going, what's happening with the bill. There will be changes to the both 70 and to 146 to bend as a function of what we really can do, what's feasible to be done. And the consultants have been out there kind of driving part of it in terms of what is technologically possible, what kind of data you have. And since, you know, I don't have the answer to all that.
Excuse me, one
minute. Back a lot of memories.
Superintendent Hill, and then we'll let you follow up.
Madam Chairman, Senator Nicholas, as you know, we're all familiar with EA 90, and I do not know where in EA 90 it speaks to this. So I was wondering if you could enlighten me.
Matt?
Madam Chair, I missed the first part of the discussion. I was.
Go ahead, Cindy.
Madam Chairman, I was asking for clarification regarding Senate File 70, EA 90, where it speaks to this particular issue. This particular data requirement.
What's EA 90?
Senate File 70.
Madam Chair, Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, Superintendent Hill, you know, there's a couple bills last session that plays into this. There's the recalibration bill that requires the state to monitor the data for the school finance model. Then there's the accountability model or the accountability system that requires a student and teacher record. And then also the teacher accountability bill, I think, Senate File 146. So there's all those bills that plays into the monitoring of data and statewide longitudinal data system. And again, this also ties into the Hathaway student Hathaway scholarship. You know, what are those students doing after they graduate from high school, then post-secondary? That's kind of this whole statewide longitudinal data system. So there's many factors at play that deal with the statewide longitudinal data system.
Superintendent Hill.
Madam Chair, Mr. Dilley, would you say that all of these had to do with the statewide longitudinal data system that he's referring to?
I would not. The priority number one, the unified computing system is the one that would support it. The other two are standalone. You could tangentially draw a connection between the two, but none are dependent upon the other.
Thank you.
Representative Edmonds, would you like to follow up?
Well, just, you know, my thought is now, are we going to have enough time? I mean, is there going to be enough, you know, data is usually takes a little bit of time, so are we going to have enough time, given this is January 2012, we're about to go into the session, and I'm hearing that the accountability committee is not going to discuss this till Monday. Is this going to be enough time to get all these components together? I mean, I guess I would ask the Department of Ed that, since they're the ones that have the most groundwork done on this, did they feel comfortable that, depending on what happens on Monday, that they'll be able to work with consultants and get this together so we have a good estimation and can get it done in February, should the entire body agree with whatever comes out of the accountability committee?
Madam Chair, I think we can comply with that.
Superintendent Hill.
Madam Chair, we will comply. We always have and always will.
Thank you. Okay. Further discussion on this, or we all got our directions for Monday? Thank you. Any further questions of the agency? Mr. Hansen.
Madam Chair, we have an unusual request for you. If you'll look in the packet that I handed out, I believe it's
139,
the last letter in the packet is we're asking to give you money. I think this is like a man biting dog story.
I was going to say, for me?
Well, for the state.
Thank you.
And you'll see in the letter that since 2002, the department has been receiving funds from the Universal Service Administration Company. It's called USAC. And These are refunds on the charges the state pays for its wind service lines. And in 2004, the legislature had a footnote in the budget bill that directed the department to use any funds received from the Universal Service Fund to fund the Wyoming Education Network wind program. And from 2004 until September 2010, we did that. We collected the funds, we deposited, and we used it for approved expenditures to support the wind. By September 2010, now this is not 11, but 10, over a year ago, the unexpended balance had risen to $7,288,000. And A&I had a concern that since it was this high, it was time to bring it before the legislature. And so the money was put into deferred revenue, and we've had some pretty hefty checks come in, one-time type hefty checks come in. So as of our last accounting, last week, we had $11 million in this fund. And the governor and the superintendent and the staff here have met several times to talk about the best use of this money. And we've kind of hit a compromise. We think that the best use would be to return to the school foundation, to the permanent fund, the $7 million that was initially embargoed in deferred revenue. Put that in school foundation, permanent fund. I think we're going to need the interest off that money in years to come. When you get your Craig report, I think you're going to see that however small this, it'll be in the $300,000-$400,000 a year income off of it. And then the rest of the funds will continue to leave in deferred revenue. because there's several items that will need to be paid out of here, and that we'll B11 those through the governor's office. And so with that, we're asking for a footnote in the budget to direct this deposit, $7,288,000 in the common school land income account.
That's awesome news.
What was the, you say this, it came from funds received from the Universal Service Fund. What portion of this, I guess, first of all, that would be a non-school foundation source, or is that a school foundation source?
Madam Chair, we consider it to be a school foundation source since school foundation supports the WIND every year in the budget that you have in front of you.
These are all foundation program dollars that were either came back or were unexpended.
Madam Chair, these are actual expenditures that we've made in the past that we're getting a slight refund on. And it's expenditures that we've made and in the last couple of years the districts have made. And so we're looking to work with the governor on a B11 to return $233,000 to the districts for their portion, what they paid, and the rest of it we feel the state has paid through school foundation.
And we're current, so also all the school districts are being provided with their services and are met based under those contracts, so everything is up to date?
Madam Chair, that is correct. This is a refund for them.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, good. Further questions? Representative Harshman.
Just one quick one I almost forgot for folks leave. It was about the 8th grade explore test on the 8th grade unit of study, and I haven't seen it anywhere in the budget. Is that now kind of eliminated, or where's it paid for at? Because we're looking at, with this accountability bill, moving the explore tests and making some changes. So I was wondering where that money was at.
Madam Chair,
mm-hmm.
Representative Harshman, right now, currently, with I think it's 6131, the college and aptitude job testing funds that we get, I have enough money to pay for the 8th grade unit of study out of that. Because of Enrolled Act 90 and how it passed last year, that has now become a permanent requirement. If you take a look at the bill that is looking like it's going to go before the legislature, if that bill passes the way it is right now, we're looking at testing seniors on the ACT, juniors on ACT plus writing, 10th graders on plan, and 9th graders on the Explore. I imagine those we will have to come back to you with a fiscal note on because it's not going to be $602,000 per biennium to run those assessments. It's going to be up close to around $1 million, and I'm just guesstimating right now. But right now, currently, that budget can handle testing juniors and eighth graders. Yeah,
okay.
Or ninth graders.
But if we do, as that bill you referenced, and we're going to look at Monday, of course, that talks about taking 1/7 of that PAWS money, or maybe it's more. It might be more than 1/7. It probably is, because the 11th grade test is a larger test, which is considerably more money than what you're talking. So it would be an overall cost savings. Do you understand? We get rid of the 11th grade PAWS and move to this suite of ACT testing. Looks to be a much cheaper alternative.
Superintendent Hill?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Representative Harshman, right now in the bill, the 11th grade test for our state assessment is included, but you are correct regarding the MAP for 11th graders with the additional writing. It takes it from approximately $250,000 to $500,000, so it is a significant increase. Where that money will be coming from, of course, we'll defer to you.
Yeah. Okay, how, just while we're on that subject, any progress on the state waiver and the ACT, and as we talked about? I think that's the way we've got it written in there. Has there been any work moving on that yet? That hasn't been long, I understand.
Madam Chairman, Representative Harshman, you know, it was Hathaway, that part of the Hathaway and the ACT legislation was humming along just fine, and then last year with passage of EA 90, we were conducting that test in the eighth grade. But with EA 90, had a discussion with some districts around the state, some folks around the state, and if the consensus was is that if the test results were going to use for school accountability, we were testing eighth graders coming right out of their seventh grade summer and just with a month of remediation left, and we were going to hold those folks to eighth grade cut scores on the Explore, we decided to allow them to go ahead and go all year with instruction and then use take it in ninth grade but use the eighth grade cut scores so it would better reflect the I guess the academic achievement of the students. But as far as the waivers, the way I'm reading the bill right now, it looks like students on IEPs could still, with parental approval, do waivers and then take a work keys. But
waiver
this,
from I'm the waiver from the federal government.
I'm sorry. I apologize for that.
And maybe we can get that next. I don't want to.
Okay. Yeah.
But it's an interesting. Maybe we can just have a sidebar on that.
That would be a good idea,
thank you.
Representative Parshman.
All right.
Further questions? Great. Superintendent Hill. Oh. Ken, I'm sorry about that.
Now we're off budget Esquivel. Questions. Okay,
we're on questions.
Of the department and Superintendent Hill. One of the things that I've been getting a lot of calls about lately is trying to get more suicide intervention programs in the schools.
Superintendent Hill.
Madam Chairman, Representative Esquivel, thank you for asking. As you know, we have the exception request for $200,000 that we're seeking approval for initiatives like those. We think that something more can be done, and certainly we've asked for some funding to support those initiatives within our districts. And our districts are hoping that this comes through, so I'm hoping that you'll support us in that as well. I'm glad you're receiving the calls. I know that it's statewide a concern. Thank you for bringing it to our attention today.
Okay, and then we also have handout 143, which is the School Foundation Payment Amortization Schedule. Would we like to take a minute to look at that and see if there's any questions?
Take it through us, Fred.
Madam Chair, yes. I thought the committee might be interested to see their work from last session where the legislature changed the funding schedule for the districts and the loans to recapture districts. So the first page shows you which districts applied for an advance payment, how much they received, and how much they paid back. And with the change in statute, it turned out that all the districts are qualifying for a advance payment are the same as the recapture districts. No bubble districts qualified for an advance payment. That question came up last year. So we just wanted to give you the numbers here. And then the second page, the longer, much more detailed page here, is the finance division of the Department of Education keeps track of the entire school foundation cash flow during the year. And we start off with an estimate, not a swag, but a pretty good estimate of when and where and how much each of the agencies are going to spend out of the school foundation. And then each month we turn that estimate to what actually happened. And so this year, because of the schedule of the payments and the change the legislature made, we're only borrowing $155 million from the permanent fund for these payments. And you'll see the schedule. We pay it back. I think it takes all the way till June before we can pay it back. We get the cash. But this is a bigger improvement over last year. Last year, we borrowed over $300 million. I think it was like $325, something like that. I should know because the treasurer made me sign a promissory note to the treasurer for $325 million. And so had you not funded me the rest of the year, my lifestyle would have been severely affected paying back that $325 million.
What are you talking about, lifestyle? You wouldn't have had anything.
Yeah. So we didn't want to go through all of this in detail unless you want to, but this is the cash flow analysis as of December 31st for the what's happened so far and what's going to happen the rest of the school year.
I think
the gist of it, Fred, looking at we're borrowing in November $155 with our first payment back in January of $50, and then the treasurer is holding it until June to make the last payment. I had in my mind that with the recapture districts paying back in December, which it looks like they are doing, that would enable us to get most of the debt paid back in December.
Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, this is the way it's working out. No, we had to borrow from the Treasurer $155 in November. We now think with our 55 million that we ended up at the end of December. If you'll see, that's the bottom line under December. The ending balance was 55 million. Plus the revenues we're expecting from taxes this month in January, we think we can pay back 50 million. But you'll see the cash flow, we get down to, we get 70 million in February, March, but in April, we're only down with a balance of just less than $3 million, and then it comes back up in May. So we don't see that we can pay it back until June, but if it changes, we'll certainly pay back earlier.
Well, show me where, okay, you look over on your first page, you've got the district's loan repayments, and most of them are repaying their loans. Where do the loan repayments reflect on the...
They reflect, Madam Chair, they reflect on the line that says recapture loan. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I believe it's 6 items down under expenditure. Mm-hmm. So you see the $43 million going out in August, and then the payback of $41 million in December, and maybe January from the other district.
Okay. Then... Okay, I see that. Now the so I'm trying it in my mind's, and Matt, my recollection is that we weren't going to have to do as much borrowing.
Matt?
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, if you remember last year, the initial borrowing amount around October, November was about $375 million.
Right.
So we reduced it about half. The original bill draft last year was to collect the local revenue from districts on the 25 and 6 mil and have that come in. And that would have profiled that we probably would not have had to borrow anything from the Common School Permanent Land Fund. But the compromise through the legislature was to pay the districts in a 10-month period rather than a 3-month that we did last year. So the compromise reduced the borrowing by about $200 million, and it reduced our interest payments by about half, from about $10 million to $5 million.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That concludes our presentation.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much, Superintendent Hill. Mr. Hanson, thank you very much. Folks, let's take a really quick 5 minutes. And walk around once. You're up.
Gotta have to agree with you. I gotta agree with you.
Okay. So this cites all of this cites all the statute and where the money came from, where it all is. So if you needed to, that's where.
Okay, and you're heading out now?
No, I came back.
Oh, you're back.
But I was also going to tell you one thing that Tony told me to tell you. I met with Hank Bailey, and he agreed.
Oh, well, that's good.
Well, he's on
the school. Oh, he's on the school. He's not the lawyer. He's
board. No, he's on the school.
Okay, gotcha.
And so, Tony thought he'd like.
So what are we? Are we gonna? Do we have to figure this all out here? Who are we gonna hear from?
I'm going to think about it over the weekend. I got to refresh my memory. I mean, I got to go back and read my materials. I don't think it's that hard. But I think we'd use our consultants to make sure that.
I'll
tell you here's my concern right now. I'll be honest with you. This IT guy, not double. I don't know if I want to give that $3 million to him to spend. We might want to give it to, I mean, I don't mind doing it, but I'd rather give it. If my choice is between he and talk to Flynn. I get to Flynn.
We've talked to Flynn on like the PTSB thing. They have $1.4 million. Talking to Flynn, he says he can build it in house for a lot cheaper.
Well, that's what I want. I think we want Flint. I want to hear from Flint. I want to hear some stuff. We can get it done, but for me, it's not so much. The work needs to be moving for accountability, and we need to go there. But this guy scares me. I mean, I just don't think he's as bright as a bulb on the block for $3 million.
So if Flint builds it, there's still a...
All right, welcome back. We have before us Mr. Bill Mai and Buck McVeigh, and they're going to give us an update on the Craig report and revenue forecast. Welcome, and thank you, gentlemen, for your hard work. May we have your real names, please?
Well, Madam Chair, my real name is Byron, and like the former governor said when he was giving me a service award, he's up there reading, he says, "Who the hell is Byron?" So, yeah, that's now you have it.
Good, and this must be William over here. Byron and William, and, you know, that changes the whole tone of this budget forecast.
Very, very noble sounding, Madam Chair.
Yes. All right. Well, gentlemen, let's hear the news.
Well, Madam Chair, you guys all know Buck, and we have another Craig member here in the audience. Fred Hansen actually sits on the group as well. So, and a bunch of them offered to be here, but I couldn't tell them when this was going to come up. So I guess this is what we have, the three of us. It's a pretty easy report, pretty minor revisions that have fairly large impacts, but not huge impacts in the scheme of things. Really, what the Craig Group did this time was we revised gas prices down fairly substantially. If you'll remember, we were at $4 through the forecast period. We revised calendar year 12, 13, and 14 down. We brought 12 down to 325, 13 down to 350, and 14 down to 375. And then we go back to our $4 flat forecast. Now, a lot of this is based on current storage levels, current demand, current no winter, current 60 degrees in Cheyenne in January, and a lot of storage build locally and nationally. We haven't had the pulls nationally from storage that we normally have this time of year for winter heating. And I think our story is still the same as it has been for quite a while. The country's still sort of reeling from a lack of industrial production and corresponding lack of gas demand for that sector. It's been a big impact. The other side of it is production has gone through the roof. There, we have all these shale plays around the country. Those shale plays are located real close to the major consuming areas. Overall, there's a glut of gas, and pretty much anything you read right now about gas is going to tell you that. Our Craig forecast for that gas price is very closely aligned to what just about every national analyst is saying as far as the 325, the 350, 375, a slow recovery to $4. And beyond that, most people don't see recovery to $5 and beyond until about 2017 or 2018. That's a long way out, so a lot can happen. But in the near term, and what affects this current budget cycle, the next 3 or 4 years are pretty key. The other component of this report that we revised is coal lease bonuses. And we actually received the coal lease bonuses that we told you about back in October. Those actually came in, and that amounts to $39.5 million in fiscal 12 and $79 million in 13-14 biennium, 15-16 biennium, and that'll take care of them. They're 5-year payouts on those things. So.
And, Bill, you meant $79 million, didn't you?
$79 million, that's correct. Madam Chairman, I'm not sure what I said now.
Dollars, but that's okay.
That wouldn't go very far in this case.
The total?
Thanks.
The total? Madam Chair, the total coal lease bonus payout over the next couple of biennium is what?
Madam Chair, the addition to the coal lease bonuses that we already had profiled, we added $39.5 million in fiscal 12 and $79 million in each of the next two bienniums.
Okay, thank you. That's where I was. Thank
okay.
you.
And all of that money flows to the school capital construction account. And, you know, I don't want to read this report to you, but I will point you to page 2 at the top of page 2. We've got a little bit of a warning there about where prices currently sit. And I think it's good to bear in mind that we've seen a lot of prices down below this $3.25 level. Frankly, they've been below $3, $2.75. We've been as low as $2.65 in January, which is a very unusual situation. The last time it happened was probably in the neighborhood of 10 years ago or more. It potentially presents a problem, and because a similar adjustment, you know, say you had to go to $3 or whatever it is, it would have a similar magnitude of effect as what you're seeing in this report. And we'll go through the fiscal profile in a minute. The point is, we'll keep watching it. If the fundamentals change any further, Craig can certainly reconvene before the session.
Go ahead, Senator Nichols.
To get $3.25 gas for 2012, 2012, that's going to require your $3.25 is an average. And historically, we would be sitting here in the winter, and I'd get a statement from you that says, you know, if we're going to get $3.25 averages, we got to get $5 winter gas when volumes are up in order to balance out low price when volumes are down in the summer. And my recollection of the TV last night, I saw a trend sheet that was all the way down, and the tickler is hitting like $2.75 now, under $3. So the it's unseasonably warm here, but I don't know that we're the biggest demand for our gas anyway. It's a national deal. So can you, give me what's giving you the comfort that we'll even hit $3.25 average for this year?
You bet, Madam Chair. Mr. Co-Chair, what gives me comfort in this, and there's not a lot of comfort in it, I'll grant you, but what does give me comfort in this is what we saw happen today with the recent storm. If, you know, we watch the weather, Buck and I do, a lot, and especially in this time of year. No, we don't do a lot of skiing, Madam Chair. Nature of the job, you know. The point is, you know, everybody, you're right, Mr. Co-Chair, you're right. The overall prices, all hubs have been hanging around $2.75, $2.85, $3. I mean, the $2.75 is a more recent development, but it's alarming given that it's mid-January. However, this storm that pushed down through the Great Lakes and all, one of the major cash markets we watch is in New York. They got a little bit of winter, just a little bit, one day of winter gave them 62 cents on their price. They're $3.79 today. So that's why I say, and Buck says, and everybody else whose name's on this report says, don't rush to thinking that the price is going to fall to $2, but also don't rush to thinking that if we get a recovery to $3.75 or $4 when we finally do get a cold snap, that's not going to be the new set price either. So $3.25 is, that's where everybody's at right now. Everybody who's making financing decisions with these gas companies, with these drillers, they're all sitting at $3.25 for 2012 right now. Another reinforcement of that position came out today with Tudor, Pickering, and Holt Company, another, you know, big finance house, Houston-based analysts, they dropped their forecast down to that $3.25 level today. They had been trying to hold it at over $4.30. So today they dropped to $3.25. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it won't drop below that, but today that's where everybody's at.
What are the factors that are pushing gas out in the market and driving prices? Is it just lots of volume, or is there
captive volume that has to go out?
Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, one of the problems, and it's obviously the shale gas plays that are really changing the pricing scheme of our domestic market. And many didn't believe that it would ever come to fruition that shale gas would be this situation. And if you go back, oh gosh, even 3-4 years ago, the fundamentals were that demand was far outstripping supply. And we were competing with the states of Texas, Louisiana, and Oklahoma. Well, nowadays, with the shale gas, we're competing with a lot or many more states. And one of the biggest suppliers or where the basins where most of your supply is coming from are what they call the wet gas basins now. And this one of the or two of the major plays are the Marcellus and the Bakken plays. There, the producers are basically producing more for the liquids in the gas. And this is crude oil and natural gas liquids because those are commanding prices closer to what crude oil is being priced out at. The unfortunate problem is the dry gas that's associated with that production is also factoring into the domestic supply. So you've got kind of a different incentive by these producers now to produce. So that's what's going on.
This is gas that, but for putting in a pipeline, would be vented.
And a lot, Madam Co-Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, a lot is being vented and flared to this day, but it's just we are now in a different fundamental here where demand is so far outstripping or supply is so far outstripping demand that really, as Bill indicated, even a cold spell of major magnitude, when you're talking about being 13% currently being 13% in underground storage over what we were a year ago, and that was a near record level. You have to wonder to yourself how much is a major cold spell going to draw down to have an impact.
So the you got these will reduced oil prices change that factor? I suppose as long as there's a demand for the oil, that wet gas is going to get produced. Producing gas that has to either go to storage or to market, and if the storage is full, then it's going to go to cheap market, I guess.
Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, I think that's correct, and you also have, it's not cheap to shut in a well. In a lot of cases, you shut wells in, you lose the production, so they'd rather sell it cheap.
And you lose your leases.
They'd rather sell it cheap than not get anything for it, so... There are a number of factors involved in this, but certainly I think what's probably pushing us below that 325 level is the last few weeks of really warm weather. I mean, that added on top of everything else is enough to push it down below that $4 level. We thought we were pretty safe at $4, and I told you back then it was as good as the weather forecast.
Well, so does a good cold spell do it in terms of bringing our overall revenues up, or does a cold spell just make sure we get 3 to 350 gas?
Madam Chair and Mr. Co-Chair, I believe it will do it. I think if you have any kind of prolonged winter weather, you're gonna come up substantially. I think we'll probably hit the 3.25.
Well, that's my question. It's 3.25 doesn't get us where we want to be. I mean, you're saying now you're out 5 years before you get to your back to $4 and $5 gas.
Right.
And what's going to take to get back to $4 to $5 gas?
Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, it all depends how long this drags out. If we spike up to $4 next week, a few months of $4 gas, you know, and quite frankly, I think they pulled off a bit of a miracle last year. Right? We had a late cold spring that drug on, pulled a lot of gas out of storage. It propped prices up pretty good. And with all the pipeline capacity out there, somehow those producers were able to juggle that storage between the storage facilities and the pipes and the demand, and it all worked out pretty well. And we actually had prices hold a lot better through August and September than any of us would have guessed. It really was fine, you know, in the $4 plus range at that point. And if you'd have asked me probably this time last year what August of 2011 was going to be, I would have guessed it would probably be in the low twos. But it was $4 all through the period.
So when we go back to reproducing this graph next week, I take it our revenues are going to go down.
Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, it's a fine question. Those revenues will go down. And again, one of the reasons why I temper this, you know, this presentation to you guys is to say, you know, just to cut to the bottom lines here, across FMRs, across severance taxes, we're looking at about a $51 million hit in the 11-12 biennium to general fund budget reserve, and a $113 million hit in 13-14 general fund budget reserve. There are a couple of other accounts we'll go into that get hit by this. The point is that $113 million that comes off in 13-14, that's out of about $3.5 or $3.6 billion of general fund revenue. So, yeah, your line's going to change. I don't know if it will be that. The thing is, when you know, as we've talked in here, when your standard budget is starting to approach your revenue line, $100 million is the difference between funding highways or locals or whatever it is. So every $100 million definitely counts. I don't know that you're going to see that much of a different look to that line.
How about when we start looking at the 15 and 16, though? Because now you've got growth in agencies and you've got growth in agencies as well as lost revenues.
Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, another excellent question. In my view, I think as you go forward, as long as that revenue line is flat, and every member in here has seen what has been occurring with insurance costs, I mean, costs simply go up. Costs of government simply go up, and so that standard continues to grow. We've thrown some additional costs. I should say you. As a state, we've thrown some additional costs into these budgets that are trying to look forward and recognize deferred costs to the state, like that landfill account and some of those things. And we've built in, you know, $50 million now for a standard budget for highways that didn't used to be a general fund expense. So that's all part of that purple slope that's going up. But I think, you know, from my perspective, as sort of an outsider looking in, I guess I see that as a really responsible thing to do, because those are costs that you can only defer for so long. So if you start to recognize them now and you recognize them as part of your ongoing growing demand for this revenue stream, 15, 16 to get right to the point after dancing around it for a while, it starts to look pretty ugly. Your line's going to go underneath where I would say your standard is going to be if it continues to grow at that roughly 8 to 10% per biennium rate. I think your general fund budget reserve account revenue line, if nothing else changes, it's going to fall under your standard. If not 15, 16, certainly 17, 18.
Bill and Buck, maybe you could touch, too, on the fact that Wyoming tends to be counter-cyclical, and when we look at the nation, we hear a little bit of bright news about it, slight recovery, increase in jobs, a bit of industry increasing manufacturing jobs and things. So in, you know, 2009 and 10, when the rest of the nation was doing so poorly, we weathered the storm fairly decently. And if you'd like to comment.
Madam Chair, you're right. We have had this tendency to be somewhat countercyclical, but what really led us out of our recession was the very industry we're talking about right now, and that's the energy industry, particularly the oil and gas. And what's going to happen with these continued low prices, actually, I think you are going to eventually see situations where shut-ins are going to be necessary. Certainly the coal bed methane producers and the production in the Powder River Basin likely going to be the ones to suffer as well. So the very thing that led us out of the recession now is starting to show signs of leveling off now, and that I'm talking about the oil and gas employment numbers. And the other big contribution from this sector, from the mining sector in general, is its contribution to sales and use taxes. That has been the sole impetus, if you will, for the improvement we've seen in sales and use tax collections over the past couple of years too. Those are starting to show leveling off trends as well. So, I mean, it all hinges on natural gas prices, basically, some crude oil, definitely crude oil prices, and where producers feel comfortable in going.
And again, it was the CBM that gave us those good monies in 2005 and 2006 that gave us a lot of opportunity to expand our infrastructure and do a lot of great things in the state of Wyoming. So, yeah.
Madam Chair, if the committee would take a look at Table 9, the very back page of the Green Report, if you want an illustration of sort of the ebb and flow of what drives the state, I think that assessed valuation table is about as good as any. If you take a look at the third column from the right, the minerals totals, and the individual columns further over to the left that show the breakout of the oil, gas, coal, trona, and other minerals are important as well. But if you look at that, at those minerals totals versus other property totals, you'll see back in the late 80s, when things were, in my opinion, things were pretty solid, but not, there wasn't a lot of extra money in the state, but they were pretty solid. And you look and see, and minerals always exceeded those other property values by a pretty significant margin. And if you go through that thing and you locate the periods where the minerals values and the other property values start to coincide, and I'll point out that very obvious one in 1998, where other property actually exceeded the value of minerals in 98. For those of you who have the history who were here when that occurred, that coincides with Tax Reform 2000 and the big panic of where we were going to get the money to balance things out. In fact, it was Representative Wallace's father who taught me that line, where are we going to get the money? He said it a lot out on the House floor, and that was the time. Well, just about the time that all the earmarking and all the other changes that took place around Tax Reform 2000 and all of those efforts, take a look then going forward in that gas column, 2000, 2001, 2002, look at 2004, 2005, 2006. That's exactly what you're talking about, Madam Chairman. That gas came in and it supplied a lot of money to this state. It came in and it supplied a lot of valuation to this state. And again, going back over to that third column from the right, take a look at the 2009 numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately before it, the 2008 numbers, you know, you had a doubling of the oil price. You had, look at what that gas valuation did. And that also happens to be the time that the U.S. economy pretty much took a nosedive. So whether one drives the other or not, I wouldn't stick my neck out and say, but here's your example of countercyclicity right here in this assessed valuation table.
And before I move on to Representative Pedersen's question, then what remains constant is coal.
Madam Chairman, coal's even better than constant. Coal is solid and growing, and it always grows. It seems like it always grows. And even if it levels off or heaven forbid, slightly declines, it is an extremely slight decline. It's a solid component of this revenue forecast, and without it, we'd have a real problem.
Good. Representative Pedersen.
Madam Chair, I actually didn't have a question. I had a request for Mr. Mai. When we go in here and we have to deliver all of this to not only our peers but the agencies and different constituencies that are asking for more money and things, the co-chairman probably has the best visual aid. Is there any way that you could extrapolate that out a couple more years based on your new projections when you talk about the point where our revenues intersect what we are constitutionally and statutorily mandated to fund?
Madam Chair, Phil, can I bother you to tell me if that says 1516 on the last data point?
That sure does.
Madam Chair, Representative Pedersen, it does go through 1516, and I'd go on the record as saying 1718 would be an utter crapshoot.
Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
Is that also what I was wondering, if those numbers are based on higher gas valuations, because that may have a significant difference.
Madam Chair, they're based on higher gas valuations to the extent that revenue line actually at the top where the white boxes are showing on that represents the October reports levels. And those are at $4. All of those projections are at $4. So this will take a little bit away from that. And again, you know, that's not just gas. It's gas, coal, oil, other, you know, all the other revenue sources, which there are some, thankfully, stable revenue sources in this state. But even, you know, the good old stable ones are you know, nobody's getting much of an interest rate at this point either. So, you know, we're kind of getting hit from all angles on this thing. But still, I mean, you know, that revenue line, it's a great revenue line, and I guarantee you there would be others, most other states would be envious of it, to not see that just cratering.
Interesting thing about this chart, then you look at your Craig gas from 2003 to 2010, because it's 2003 here to 10, it's in this framework where we see the greatest jump in our standard budget. And so what ended up happening is we had extraordinary jumps in gas prices to $5 million, $7 million, to $10 million, $12 million, and we grew our standard budget. If we'd have held our standard budget at a normal growth rate, we'd have a whole different situation, but we didn't, and we grew it substantially, and now we're paying for the price.
Madam Chairman, that's correct, and you know, I mean, those were decisions you took at the time with regard to adding new programs. I mean, it isn't simply just your existing programs that grew. You added some programs to this thing, and you know, you beefed up some other programs, and so you had the money and you spent it, and you spent right there in the big middle of that chart. You know, all those brightly colored pieces of that are what we call extras, what Dean and, you know, what Budget Fiscal calls extras anyway. It's highways, locals, savings, you know, those kinds of things that you're not, I hesitate to use the word obligated, but, yeah, you know, and they're not revenue flows that are set up in statute or anything like that. They're outside of you know, your standard budget.
A lot of federal deferment, too, of tax burden over during that time.
Right. Anything you want to add to this report, or shall we move over to the Golden?
Yeah, Madam Chair, if we can get off of the gas for just a moment, I would like to add a couple of things about the Green Report here. Part of the delay in this report was, there are a couple other pieces that go into this thing. We had another state lease sale, oil and gas lease sale, and that netted, I believe, $1.1 million for general fund and $5.1 million for schools. So that, you know, relatively small pieces added into this. We added in the coal lease bonuses, but what held the report up was we got notified that there was an overpayment of royalties to the federal government to the tune of, I think, $15.1 million when you count the interest, and we were told they were going to take that out of one of our upcoming payments, and so we decided we better pull that. It was significant enough. We better pull it out of this report. So that's what the holdup was on this deal, and Craig, we haven't wavered since we made the forecast. It just was the that ONRR discussion that was had yesterday. The only other thing, I guess, that I'd like to point out in the Green Report is we changed our graph around a little bit for you on page 3 to show you the effect of this gas change on general fund and budget reserve. And then the far left point, the 910, is an actual number, and from there it's forecast. And so this will kind of give you a feel for what a 25-cent, 50-cent, and 75-cent price reduction over the course of 3 years will do to your general fund and budget reserve account. And in 15-16, you see that recovering. And I guess also on page 4, since you asked, Steve, that's where you'll find that COLI's bonus distribution.
So looking at that graph, though, is to look at the full picture of it, what you'd have to do is if you drew a line straight up on the there, I'll show you here. So in the biennium, that's your lost revenue.
Madam Chair, that's correct. From just a change in the price of gas. And what it doesn't show you is the part that always worries me. And the part that always worries me is the train that's coming from behind you.
Yep.
In the sense of school foundation program monies. Because you'll fully realize that assessed valuation impact a couple of years after it happens.
Explain why.
Because, sorry, Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, the reason why there's a delay there is because of the delay in the assessment and the collection of taxes. And taxes, there are 43 mills on all valuation in the state that go to support public schools. And because of where gas, coal, and oil, generally speaking, are located, that also has a double whammy. I guess it's the triple whammy impact of it hits your recapture districts and affects how much recapture you get to fund the SFP with. So it's valuation, it's the taxes associated with valuation and how that flows to the SFP, and then how that affects recapture. So there's a couple of compounding effects there. And each time you drop the valuation, it has greater and greater effect. So if you're at this level, you drop it to this level, it has one effect. You drop it to this level, it has a similar effect, but a larger effect with regard to recapture. And so it's it's something, I don't know if it does it to Matt, but it keeps me awake at night anytime we start seeing valuations go down.
So let's suppose the mineral valuation in Campbell County drops a dollar. That means that we lose a dollar of revenue. For every dollar of revenue that we lose, Campbell County loses a dollar, and we have to make up that dollar in the school foundation program because that lowers their recapture or the amount that they would send back to us. So it's, what you're seeing is a $2 effect.
Madam Chair, in a no offense, in a simplistic analysis, that's correct. That's the kind of compound effect that I'm talking about.
We lower our revenues. They lower their revenues. We get less back from them. So
right.
The flow through is the double whammy.
That's correct. Madam Chair, can I ask you a question? Are you still planning on going through school facilities today?
We are.
Okay. I'll keep this as absolutely brief as possible. And we can probably stick to page one if you want to see pretty much all of the effects of this goldenrod. If you look right in the middle of the page, total traditional funds available for appropriation. Don't worry about 11-12 for this part of this discussion. Go over to 13-14. There we're comparing the October level of projection with the governor's recs to the January level of projection with the governor's recs. So all of that's static. The only thing that's changing here are the assumptions in the Craig forecast. The governor, in his profile, he left on the table about $87.5 million over and above the statutory reserve amount. And now you can see in the far right-hand column, this forecast change took away all that 87 and another 26,584. So we went from having $87.5 million above water to now we're $26.6 million underwater in general fund BRA with the current governor's recs. So that's the first part. The second part is go down below, still on page one, under other projected revenue or available balances, rather. That first three lines is representing the LSRA. And the only change there is that 51-1 that we talked about, that's where all of that money flows to, and that's where all of that net effect is found. So you'll see in the 11-12 columns on the left-hand side, again, October versus January, you'll see a drop there of $51 million. So you lost some out of the LSRA. You lost a pretty good chunk out of the general fund and BRA, 51 and 113. We'll go down one more line to school foundation program balance. No change to that balance. It did change. There were some impacts there. We'll get to them in a minute. No change to the balance. Still have a $100 million balance. I would encourage the committee, if you really want to try to keep this straight in your head, think about school foundation program, school CapCon, and that Common School Permanent Land Fund holding account. Think of all three of them together. Total them up in your head and look at it that way because that money is shifting back and forth depending on certain triggers. So SFP stays at $100 million in this forecast for an ending balance in 11-12. But over in 13-14, you'll see it decrease from $100 million in the October forecast down to $42.8 million, $42.9 million in the January forecast. Similar kind of thing, next line down for school capital construction account. You'll see a net reduction there in 11-12. There's some weirdness going on again with the different transfers going on. You did add a pretty substantial amount of money. Remember the 39.5 and the 79 million that went into the school CapCon in this report. And so you'll actually see that reflected over there in the 13-14 columns, the two right-hand columns, going from the 362.8 to the 443.7. And it's a little more complicated than that, but it's just a lot of shifting around, and really, if you just look at the three accounts in total, that's going to help you the most. And the difference just in the revenues, so before Matt throws something at me here, just from a revenue side now, not other impacts in these accounts, we added $19 million of revenues October versus January in 11-12, and $23.8 million of revenues in 13-14, October versus January. One last thing I would like to point out to you is there was another coal lease bonus sale in December. We know the amount. It was a big one, and we actually discussed this a little bit this morning. It seems like all the news you hear about coal is that it's, you know, definitely in danger of going away and all of that, and yet each coal lease bonus bid that comes in seems to be coming in at a higher and higher level. This last one, I think, was $1.35 a ton, wasn't it, Dean? Which is, I believe that's a record for Wyoming. The total amount per year for the next 5 years, we haven't received it yet. It's not reflected in the forecast yet. It will be as soon as we receive a payment. That's the way we do it on Craig, even though we know it. But you never know when they're going to come through and take away $15 million from you on a whim. $29.4 million you'll be able to add to that school capital construction account per year for 5 years.
Terry, you've got some netted out on, you got coal lease bonuses against natural gas valuation loss in the school foundation program account, but, and maybe this goes back to the delay. I mean, what kind of a hit are we seeing to the common school account for gas reductions, or does that just forward to the next biennium?
Madam Chair, it's an excellent question, Mr. Co-Chair. It's, and there, you're not going to be able to readily identify this in the profile just because of the way those accounts work. But if you assume you lost 43 mils off of that gas valuation change, it hits you in 14, the fiscal or the calendar year 12 change of 75 cents a ton. Remember, the big hit was in 12. That 75 cents, or I said 75 cents a ton, I meant per MCF. Coal and gas is too much for me at this late hour. The 75 cent hit per MCF, the $4 down to $3.25 estimate, what that does, that 12 figures into 14 revenues, and by my calculation, I say that hits you, disregarding recapture, $49.4 million the 1 year. You got two more years of reduced prices coming for the next biennium.
So by my calculations, the minimum amount we pick up, we've got $114 million swing. We got about a $50 million loss to the LSRA, and we got a delayed hit of about $49 million. So you're close to, you're an immediate loss of about $164 million, and we got a delayed hit of about $50 million. So it's going to be a little bit over a $200 million loss of revenue.
Mr. Chairman, you're counting both General Fund BRA and School Foundation.
Yes.
You know, probably a pretty close ballparker, I would say. Any heartburn with that, Dean? Just doing the quick mental math here. It's pretty close, Mr. Chairman. I mean, really, again, the reason why I really like that question, quite frankly, is if you look at that first hit to the valuation part that we're talking about, the 43 mils, that doesn't come for another 2 years down the road, you know, and so you still have 2 years to get out from under that. And so this is what, you know, Dean and I and Steve before me and pretty much everybody who tries to keep you apprised of the situation, this is what we always warn you about, is if there is a, you know, a big downturn, a big downswing, it takes a while to work its way through the system.
Well, and if our revenues come back in 2 years, we still have suppressed school foundation account for 2 years.
From that source, Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Other questions, or should we move on to school facilities commissions or comments?
Well, I guess my last question is, Madam Chairman, is that and that is going back to your warning statement on the top of page 2. When we left last session, you know, we, or actually been 2 years ago, we had a similar warning, and we put a budget reduction clause in, and Craig met in April and said, hey, it's the warning. We told you about it. We warned you about it, and here it is, and we had that automatic budget reduction. So we go into this session already before markup in this committee. We've already got a $26 million deficit to make up. We have a 15-16 issue with respect to how we're going to pay for that, knowing that we're going to have delays. And we had talked about maybe implementing some budget cuts, further cuts, simply to accommodate the 15 and 16 budget years, so that the reason why we're talking about 4-8% budget cuts was to prepare ourselves for 15 and 16. Now we're saying now we have to begin more cuts simply to get through this budget. Your revenues also reduce in 15, 16, and you've got a warning out here. So, I mean, if we were looking at budget cuts to pick up the warning, that is. No, excuse me, the budget cuts that we were looking at were simply to pay for 15 and 16 with our present revenue forecast, and now you've lowered that and you got a warning.
Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, I very much appreciate the position you're in, and I think that's what we're trying, the Craig is trying to do this time is to let you know we think we're in front of it. We think we've got the decrease caught here. We don't want to catch you the same way we caught you a few years ago. I wasn't chairman of that, Craig, may I point out, but and I think Buck was sick that day. But but in all seriousness, I think Craig takes this extremely seriously, and while they don't want to unnecessarily ring alarm bells, they also don't want to leave you with the impression you have more money than you have. And I think, you know, the 2-4 and 8% reductions were probably a really good effort to anticipate what we were intimating back in October, that there was potential for this to happen. I think this catches it. I hope this catches it.
Well, as we look forward to markup, what was driving our need for budget reductions were the 15 and 16 years more than this year. Now we have to reduce for this budget cycle, and we still have to go back and refigure 15 and 16. So what we'll be doing, I assume, next week before markup is redoing our out years to figure out where we're going to be and what we're going to need to do to meet our 15 and 16 obligations.
Hey, Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, I certainly appreciate where you're coming from, but I would also remind you that, again, if these projections hold up, that recovery is largely taking place. So you'd be very close back to those 15, 16 lines. Now, again, you know, schools is a worrisome prospect, and although I said I wasn't going to go there, I'm going to go there, and here's why. If you turn to page four. And again, this chart is showing you, you know, the chart up against the wall there is showing you a revenue line, an ongoing revenue line versus ongoing kinds of expenditures. On page four, disregard school CAPCON, disregard that holding account, disregard all that stuff that complicates things, and think about those revenues showing up at the top of that page, and just stick in the far right-hand column, say $1.74 billion of revenues, and compare that to those expenditures down below, the 1504, the 79980, you know, all those things that go into making up the 1697, except, again, let's disregard the $19.9 million transfer to school CAPCON. You know, your demands are starting to close in pretty close to your revenue line in this account. And the thing that's very worrisome to me as an analyst that's trying to keep you guys between the ditches, the thing that worries me about that is that's the one you have very little control over. That money, you're going to spend it unless something really, you know, unless you muster up the votes and the will to make some pretty drastic changes, you're on the hook for that. And so you don't have a lot more room for those revenues to continue to decline. And again, it's not to over-ring the alarm bell. You've got some money in reserves, and you've got some COLI's bonuses coming in, and things look pretty good, and you're in the catbird seat compared to almost every other state in this country. But don't take your eyes off of it.
Well, I guess to make matters worse, we've been fortunate to use what I've been calling the Hathaway spread. That's, you just described the Hathaway spread. We're using that to build schools. When we lose that spread, we don't have any way to build schools in this budget, and we have the potential of having to raid the general fund to supplement the school foundation program account.
Madam Chair, Mr. Kutcher, that's kind of the point, I guess, that I see out of all of this, is that it's a lot of money, and you have a lot of, you know, relatively speaking, you've got a lot of wiggle room there. But if that wiggle room goes away, it could go away in a big, big hurry. And then, you know, you would have a real problem.
You're going to leave us on that note?
Merry Christmas, Madam Chairman. I'm going to leave you on this note. This guy next to me decided he's going to retire, and I have to be honest with you guys, I don't recall ever serving on being part of Craig without Buck here, and I'm really going to miss this guy. He's been great to work with, and I hope his replacement's half as good as he is.
Well, Buck, we really appreciate your service, too, and we hope that you're looking forward to an amazing retirement.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. It's truly been an honor and a pleasure to work with you guys. I'm going to miss it. I knew I'd do this too, but I look forward to the next ride. So whatever that is. So thanks.
Thank you very much.
Stockpile, but it's going to go away.
We're going to
get Laramie done before we go.
Well,
I mean, you look over here, we still got.
We're going to bring up the school facility.
I mean, where you get the money is.
Department Agency 27 and
still got,
get started. We were really trying to end this day at 5 o'clock, but we know that this is a very important subject, and we'll see
and look at the auto
what we can do here.
If we stop that auto appropriation, we pick up another 245. That's the money we get. We said if we have...
Make sure we get our school bill.
Well, welcome, Mr. Cattelier. If you would like to introduce your staff and give us an overview, and then we'll work the budget. And I know that you're aware that we've had some discussion on some different projects, so we'll go from there. But you might let us know how you've enjoyed your first not quite a year yet, I think.
Madam Chair and committee members, it's a pleasure to be here today. I feel it's a privilege to be in this position, and it's one that I take very seriously. This is the first time for me before this committee, and it's also the first time for School Facilities Department in front of this committee. So there's been a little bit of a change.
And you might just want to refresh the members and just for the public, that change that occurred in the last session.
Madam Chair, I would like to do that. Senate file 110, I believe it was, last year, created the School Facilities Department. It puts the School Facilities Commission in a place of oversight, and I hope I'm describing this correctly. I work for the commissioners. I also work for the governor. So they are oversight. I see it kind of like the State Building Commission in some regards. We take policy decisions to them for their approval. And I've been very grateful for the LSO's help, the select committee's help in helping me understand my charge. And they also have outlined the responsibilities of the two department, the department and a commission. So that's kind of a synopsis of how this, I believe, has all occurred. Madam Chair, today with me I have Diane Bailey. She is my administrator of business. Also, Stanley Hobbs is administrator of planning. I have George Galita, who comes from a long career in school planning. He is my administrator of construction. And also, my executive assistant is with me today, Shelley Lovato, and our financial department, Teresa Kunkel. I'm also very proud and very grateful to have Chairman Jeffrey Carrier of the commission here today, and also Commissioner Schmidt from Fremont One is here today. I very much appreciate them taking the time out of their schedules to come and help support us here today. Madam Chairman, if
Ian, if you have opening comments you'd like to make, or if you prefer to just start working through your budget, you can do it that way too.
Madam Chairman, the governor's office, through the at the request of the JAC, we have prepared a history of our full-time equivalents and our 900 and 600 expenditures. Didn't know if you wanted to go through that first or if you wanted to proceed through the budget.
That's fine if we go ahead and do it that way, if you'd like.
Madam Chair, I have provided a handout for all of you. It's this booklet here. It looks like this. In the front of that booklet, there are a table of contents, and we'll be referring to this as we go through. Document number one is on page one, and that is the history of our full-time equivalents and also the detail of our 600 and 900 series expenditures. And with that, Madam Chair, I would ask that Diane Bailey walk through that information with you, and please feel free to ask any questions that you'd like.
Okay, we'll just take a minute to make sure everyone's on the right page and have them look at it quick. At this time of day, we start to get a little slower. Any questions, committee?
Madam Chair.
Representative Parchman.
Madam Chair, on the it's actually the next couple pages, I think the first 600 series payments to districts, but to the 900 series,
mm-hmm.
I think it's page 4 in that book. But just had a question, couple issues, was number 8 on page 4 there. Number 8 is the first one on this suitability studies. And there's several of those. That one's closed, of course, but there's others as you go down, you know, number 19 on that page, and then you flip over the next page, there's number 25, and then number 28, the bigger one, still has an open, $179,000. I guess I thought we were done with suitability studies, and I'll just, to the committee, a suitability study was kind of going in to make sure that the old functionality or lighting and those things, is that been worked into, are we still doing that, or are we phasing that out? It was more, is this building suitable to educate children, air, lighting, safety, those things?
Madam Chair, this should not have been labeled that way, Representative Harshman. Number 28 you referred to is Troy Decker. He is an AWAC position who we have renewed his contract to help us. Originally, when he came on to this department, he was involved in a suitability study. I'm not sure how that should be described, but that is not the right description
okay.
there. I apologize for that.
And then, Madam Chair, just number 11 on that, I think it's page 4. I just wanted to, so this committee sees, because we'll refer back to that probably at some, when we get to the Natrona project, if we even talk about them today, but mark up whenever, but that's that Fanning, Howie, suitability, or Ed Specs study that was done that really guided a lot of the budget stuff. I just wanted to make note of that so people saw that. That was all I had on it.
Madam Chairman, what are the ARC Integrated Program Management, what are they doing for us?
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, this committee is well aware of some audits that were performed on the School Facilities Commission, and one specifically in 2009 was performed by RSM McGladrey, and then the following year in 2010, audit was performed by the state of Wyoming. Several audits findings were found and reports were given to, I'm not sure who they were presented to. As part of my charge from the governor's office and taking this position, I was to give an assessment of our department. And going back through and working through that process, I found that the audit findings, many of the audit findings found in those two reports had not been adequately addressed. I have been working with the school, the Select Committee on School, and this consultant is coming in, and they are going to assess where we actually are on these audit findings and confirm which ones they feel have been met and which ones that have not. They also will be developing standard operating procedures and getting processes in place assuring that these audit findings are no longer a consideration. At the end of the report, or at the end of the audit findings and the end of this contract, we will be able to finally give a report that shows that we are in compliance to the findings.
You already approved that level at 279, or did you build that afterwards?
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, we had proposals for this work. We did go out for advertisement and selected this management firm to come in and assess us.
Before or after the last budget, though? I mean, have we actually approved that amount, or is it?
Madam Chair, I'm going to have to give me a minute and try to remember exactly what we did there. And I'd like to confer with staff if I could.
Yeah, and Ian, anytime you need to do that, go ahead.
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, is in our current budget, and we have paid for it out of operating funds.
And we authorized, we created a line item for this, or it's a section 900. I mean, was there ever an exception request made or a request of the legislature to approve that level of spending for an audit? Maybe we did. I don't remember.
Madam Chairman, we're checking that out right now.
Let's go through the list. ABI.
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, this is a task order contract that we are have with ABI. Senator Nicholas, this is a task order, what we call a task order. If we need an assessment on a piece of property, corners located, or a topographical study, they are under a contract, and we can have them go out and get information we need on a specific site. Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, that's correct there. Resident contractors. Cheyenne.
Coleman Engineering.
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, Coleman Engineering has, over the history of this department, provided value engineering services for school designs and school projects.
Is he a Wyoming guy?
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, they are from Idaho.
Are they?
Go ahead. Go ahead. I didn't want to. Go ahead.
Well, so with the VE process, that's just part of your budget. You go out. Were they selected through a procurement process, or is that just a firm that everybody's comfortable with?
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, this contract was in place upon my arrival. We did request funds as a prorated process to retain his services. I'm being told that it was initially provided as an RFP.
I assume you're free to call for the expenses or the services or not, depending under the contract. If you don't call for them, you don't get them.
Madam Chair and Senator Nicholas, that's correct.
Is there a reason why we cannot find the VE services, value engineering services, from Wyoming people?
Madam Chair, I do not believe that is a problem. He has been involved with the School Facilities Commission for an extended amount of time, and has a wealth of knowledge of what our statutes and that we operate under require.
Once you're in the door, you're in forever.
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, I would not say that. I have had specific conversations with Mr. Coleman, and as I grow into this job, I would hope that our staff could do this work instead of a consultant. At this point, we do not have that staff expertise developed to where that can be done in-house. It has been very helpful to have him as a third party sometimes, as a mediator between the district and the department. However, the department does have the final authority of what the value engineering items should be.
For $1 million worth of consulting, and if you need another employee, we'd probably be willing to do that to keep it in Wyoming.
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, that would be very acceptable to me.
Is this VE process something that you could do in-house if you had another employee?
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, if we had the correct employee, very much so.
Could you provide to us a proposal between now and next Friday for a budget line item and authorization to bring those VE services in-house?
Madam Chair and Senator Nicholas, we can certainly do that.
Thank you.
Could I just ask a question about this particular contractor? Is he the same person that does a lot of work for the state building, also with Cathcart Shop and also YDOT? I mean,
Madam Chair and Representative Harshman,
you work for, I mean, that was your former shop.
In my time at Construction Management, I did not meet Mr. Coleman. I don't remember him working for the Construction Management Division, but I could be mistaken.
And I don't know. I mean, I know he's done schools forever, since probably day one, but I just didn't know if he was pretty much the Wyoming's go-to guy for all construction.
Madam Chair and Representative Harshman, in my time at Construction Management, I did not work with Mr. Coleman, and I don't remember him ever being associated with Construction Management.
Thank you.
Madam Chairman, going down to Inberg Engineering, that's Wyoming contractor for surveying.
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, this is another task order. He is a Wyoming resident, and if I might just elaborate on this process a little bit. Prior to my arrival, they had two firms, mainly AVI and Inberg Miller, on what they call the task order process. So if we needed some borings or a survey on a piece of property or services that they could provide, they were under contract and would perform those services. We have just completed an RFP similar to what Construction Management uses, and it will be called an as-needed contract. So I'll have many civil engineers, many architects, many engineers from across the state, and we have taken them in kind of geographical locations. And we will write contracts for them so that on an as-needed basis, I will be able to use some civil engineer in the Sheridan area if I need him in Sheridan, rather than sending someone from Casper or Cheyenne to perform that work. So we are changing that process somewhat.
Next page, I want to draw the attention to what are the procurement services contract for Perry Guthrie?
Madam Chair and Senator Nicholas, this is a company that helped the commission develop contracts, construction contracts, and architectural consulting contracts.
Where are they out of?
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, they are out of Nebraska. I'd like to comment briefly that
this is a law firm?
Madam Chair and Senator Nicholas, that's correct.
You got to go to Nebraska to get lawyers?
Madam Chair and Senator Nicholas, I have many questions about these contracts, and they are under a big review. We have had the Attorney General's office, Marty Hartzog, look at them with us. Also, Michael O'Donnell. They are in a big need of being revised. They are not owner-friendly, and my intent would that we would use Wyoming standard contracts over what we have currently. I don't believe they are a good contract for the school facilities department.
Well, first of all, we have a wonderful AG's office that can develop expertise in any area you want, including construction contracts, which is there are a lot of lawyers in the state of Wyoming who do that for a living.
Madam Chair, I do not know why this decision was made. It's very questionable in my mind, and when I read the contracts, it's more questionable.
Have you stopped using them?
We are making revisions. We have not used the firm since I have been there, no.
Good. With respect to, now with Troy,
Decker, you said he's an AWAC. I'm just looking at the expenditure total. What period of time was that over?
Madam Chair and Senator Nicholas, I'd...
What's Troy doing for you?
He started out under the assessment, which I believe was 4 years ago. He worked on adequacy assessments of school facilities and helping establish the suitability studies that were done. Currently, he is going to be used in the planning division of our office. His history is with school facilities. He understands school operations. He has a lot of contacts with superintendents around the state, and he helps us with our facility planning. So it's not an assessment. It is a...
opposed to AWAC?
Madam Chair and Senator Nicholas, meeting with the governor's office this year, there was a wish not to add a full-time equivalent, and so that's the reason.
Well, I understand that, but if this is a biennium budget... that's $100,000 a year. So that's a pretty healthy salary. Is that where his salary level would have been? Now that would include benefits too, because he's AWAC, so you'd have to take about 20% off. So is that comparable to what you would pay him if he's in your shop?
Madam Chair and Senator Nicholas, you're correct in saying since he is an AWAC, we do consider he has to provide his own insurance and retirement if he wishes to do so. That's the reason that level was chosen. Other individuals in our office who perform not the same duties but receive approximately the same pay levels.
Or how long has Troy been with you? How long do you expect him to be contracting with them?
Madam Chair and Senator Nicholas, I believe Troy is an excellent individual. I believe as long as he wants to stay, I would have him.
Well, this is one of those ones, if it walks like a duck, talks like a duck, looks like a duck, maybe ought to be a duck. Are you saying that for all practical purposes, he's a state employee and that you've just got him classified as an AWAC?
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, what I have found is our staff is extremely busy. We need this employee. I am very thankful to have him in this capacity. I would have him as an employee capacity if it would be considered.
Okay, why don't you provide for us in the next week a budget to move the 900 series into the 100 series and move him from an AWAC to an employee.
Madam Chair, we would be happy to do that.
And Ian, while we're on this, can you tell us what the other two AWACs, you have this handout 119, and you currently have three AWAC positions. So we've just discussed Troy. If you just briefly tell us the other two and their responsibilities.
Madam Chair, one of the other AWAC positions, his name is J.J. or Jeremy Rivelli. Again, has a great background in finance. He is a very bright individual. He runs and maintains now our AIM database system since Stanley Hobbs has moved out of that position. This database contains all the information about all the districts, all the expenditures, major maintenance across the state. So, again, a valuable engineer, valuable employee that we really do need to have. Madam Chair, the other AWAC position currently right now is vacant.
Okay.
Madam Chairman, maybe we ought to talk about how long we want to stay tonight.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
And talk about what we want to accomplish before we... I don't know that we're going to finish this agency up tonight unless people want to stay beyond a limit. So
Okay.
You okay with another 3 hours? Tonight.
Well, we could work the operating budget. We could just work the budget and then bring them back to work the school, the actual projects.
Well, let's back into it. How long are we going to stay tonight?
Okay. Well, I was thinking 5, then I changed my mind that I could go to 6, but what would like the committee like to do?
Who's traveling?
Well, we all wish to.
Who wants to leave at 5 and bring it back, I guess? You've got, for me, I'm only an hour away. I'm packed up to head home. I'm an hour away. But if we're going to go to 5, then let's just decide we'll go to 5. If you want to go to 6, you get to make the decision. Rest in your hands.
I think we should go. I hate to do this to everyone, but we've put in long days, and I think we need to stay here till 6 to see what we can accomplish, and I have a feeling we're not going to get to the projects themselves. Possibly we'll touch on those, but I think it's important to Mr. Cattalier that we get through a majority of his budget. And then we will definitely leave at 6 so you can get on the road.
Okay.
Thank you. You okay with
that? Thank you, Madam Chair, certainly.
Madam Chairman, before you continue,
go ahead, Don.
Thank you. When should we, presumably we won't finish with school facilities by 6 o'clock. Would you like them to come back?
Yes, I was just considering that they're going to be important to our, certainly to our markup and further discussion. And Matt, you want to talk about maybe our...
Madam Chair, next Thursday we have the morning schedules for ECA, and then I believe that afternoon we have...
School
facilities kind of blocked out, so it might be appropriate to put them on Thursday.
Yes. How does that work for the committee and everyone else involved here? Does that work for you, Mr. Cattalier?
Madam Chair, are you saying 1 o'clock on Thursday?
Yeah, 1 o'clock on January 19th.
Madam Chair, I believe we can make that work. We have a commission meeting that morning, but we should be done by 1.
The
Senator
commission
Nicholas,
meeting
if
can.
If we need to, we would.
You can. All right.
Is your commission meeting here in Cheyenne?
It is.
Also, that'll work then. Okay. You guys aren't making double trips down here then. And
all right.
Let's
quit.
Let's quit at 5. And
okay.
Let's, maybe go right to the big issue. That's what I was thinking.
Mike.
Let's go right to the big issue, and that is, let's talk about the differences between our own select committee and what the governor's recs were, what the issues that we need to be looking at, show us what we need to be reading, and sort of
okay.
Let's hold off all of the hold off all questions and just let Ian take us through those things, your book. I'm interested, Ian, in knowing, you know, what's our construction capacity, how much we've got planned out, sort of the big picture, and... rock and roll.
Yeah, so we'll
give us as much as you can in 15 minutes. Tell us what we need to be reading over the weekend.
Yes, sorry about that, but yes, if we could just
Madam
have
Chair,
informational, that might help all of us here.
Madam Chair, I very much appreciate that. And
great, okay.
I think I've gone over this enough in my own mind that I can explain it to you, so I hope to do that here today. On page 8 of 75 in your handout here, we put together kind of a scenario or a synopsis of how our budget got to where it is today. So we are required to submit a budget to the School Facilities Commission, I believe, on September 1st each year for approval. We developed that budget, and if you look at your handout here on page 8 of 75, it's under original. This is the School Facilities Department budget, which was presented to the commission and then approved by the commission. If you skip over the governor's adjusted budget at this time and go to the select committee's budget, in October, I believe it was the 19th, we met with the select committee in Casper to review our budget, and they were to present it to the governor, I believe, by December 1st. I may not be correct on those dates. During that meeting, we ran through our budget. At the time, we did not have additional monies for the Natrona project in this budget because the final scope had not been determined. At that meeting, the select committee recommended a $75 million placeholder for the Natrona County High School projects. The school facilities department and the commission had been working very hard to finally have our Natrona County High School project scope determined. And that was finally determined on the 10th of November by the consultant Fanning and Howie, who we had previously mentioned here in our 900 series. They recommended a remedy for the Natrona County projects. At that time, we understood the estimates would be $126 million.
Madam Chair, just a correction. I think if you look back at the budget documents, I think the select committee actually left zero in that spot, and we left that up to the governor because the Ed specs were going to be delivered after our meeting, and actually some of the talk was probably around 120, but we left that blank. We never put a number in that. We never guessed at 75. We never took a swag at all. Matt, is that, I don't know, is that anybody else comment on? I just want to make sure we're clear on that.
Madam Chair, Representative Harshman, the documents that we sent out from staff to JAC and the select committee, we did not include any amount for the Casper projects. We assumed that was going to be based upon the motion just left up to the governor and JAC to deal with.
That was a motion by Senator Rothfuss.
Madam Chair, Representative Harshman, I believe that's correct.
Yeah.
So Matt, the 314 was a number that did not approved the Natrona within it, but did not lay down a number for it. So the 314 would be in addition to Natrona.
Madam Chair, Chairman Nicholas, the select committee really came out mirroring what the based upon what my recollection is their recommendation was the same as the commission's, which is the original 2013-14 biennium request. There was some discussion about $60,000 of planning, but I think how the select committee left it was just to adopt the commission's budget and leave minor details on planning to the governor and also the Natrona projects to the governor.
Madam Chair, if I might, my recollection of the select committee hearing is that after we went through our budget hearing with the our budget review with the select committee, Mary Kay Hill was in attendance, and at the end of that meeting she stood up and asked that the select committee would add a placeholder, and her estimate was at that time, and this was based on information she had received from us, $80 to $125 million placeholder be added into that budget, and $80 to $125 million. And I guess I don't know the exact procedure of how that happened, Representative Harshman, but what we did forward to the governor after the costs were known was that $126 million figure, which he did include in his budget. At the end of the select committee, I understood our charge was to include a placeholder for that project, along with moving some money into planning as well. Senator Nicholas, I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, we do have those. It's actually the next page in this book. If you want to stay on page 8 for one more minute, in the center column then is the governor's recommendations, which have been forwarded in our budget.
I'm trying to figure out where that 126 is because I thought you'd add 126 to 238. But am I wrong in that then? Or,
Madam Chair and Senator Meyer, what the governor did was he took the $126 million. He wanted to work within a budget recommendation of around $400 million. He added the money in to complete the fully fund the CASPER projects, and then projects that were on the bottom of that list were left off, so that he ended up with a $403 million budget.
Chairman, so we've got in the subsequent pages the projects that were, I guess for better lack of the term, redlined off the list for CASPER.
Madam Chair and Senator Meyer, that's correct.
Okay.
If you look on page 9 of 75, the yellow highlights you see here, these were recommendations we received at the Select Committee hearing. They moved some money into planning. This was to cover capacity studies in schools, which we are required to determine. If you look on page 10 of 75, this is our design money. The total there of $18 million was the School Facilities Department recommendation. With the other projects that have been left off the list, you can see it was reduced to $8.8 million. Then on page 11 of 75, these are actually the construction projects. The yellow highlights, again, are where additions were made. This does represent the final funding amount to bring the Natrona to $126 million out of this biennium budget. And the schools in blue then were left off of the list.
Let me just ask, Chairman, in the what's the total realistic price it's going to require us to complete KW, Natrona, and the CAPS facility?
Madam Chair and Senator Nicholas, I believe the best way I can show you that is would be on page 40.
Yep.
Madam Chair, what is represented here are cost estimates from the project architects and also the educational specification consultants. This represents a couple of different scenarios, but the scenario that was recommended by the commission is represented on the bottom graph. It's labeled F and H Scenario 2B, which provides a new facility for Roosevelt Alternative High School, a new facility for the CAPS program. Not 100% new, but basically a new Kelly Walsh, and then new and renovated space in Natrona County High School.
Now, with 2B that was recommended by the commission, is that one that provides for new swing space, or does that provide for pushing, trying to have KW, a new KW, and then use the old KW for students?
Madam Chair and Senator Nicholas, those details have been talked about a lot, but they are not finally determined at this point. What is in this scenario 2B is actually a staggered start, so not all of the projects at once. But the educational specification consultant does not get into the detail of exactly what and how the temporary space could be finally done.
I guess when we get next week, I'd like to know what the options are. I'd kind of like to get that decided so we can just budget it and move it on so we're not having you guys fight with Casper any longer. Just let's make the decision, cut and run, okay?
Senator Nicholas, we will do that.
Right. Madam Chair. Can I just a couple things on this, back to this $75 million that was what in the budget. Anyway, I've got the minutes of the meeting, and talks about how we forwarded the school facilities department budget, and Senator Rothfuss made the inquiry, and they include a line item for Natrona County with an amount TBD to be determined. Direct LSO staff to draft a letter to the governor, acknowledges the commitment of the select committee to the Natrona County School Facility Projects in an amount that may range from an additional $80 to $120 million. The motion to amend the construction section and send the letter to the governor's draft LSO was adopted by voice vote. Okay, so that's that part. We're going to learn more about this, and we're kind of rushed for time right now, but really a question I have then on this page 40, where you have the F&H scenario 2B, Fannie, that stands for Fannie and Howie,
yes, sir.
Which did this. This is the 1,100 pages right here. I've read a lot. I've read all the executive summary, but how come not 2A, which was over $5 million cheaper?
Madam Chair and Representative Harshman, we have talked about this on several occasions, and we have looked into this, and I thought I may have included it in this booklet, but I have not. With the project that the school facility department and commission will be doing in Casper, the schools, the high schools, and two elementary schools, the schools that or the work that Casper College is going to be doing, those two entities alone in the next 1 to 3 years will be expending $327 million in that community. If this project, I'm sorry, if this project is approved, this $236 million high school project, two elementary schools in Casper, and work at Casper College, alone, just those these two entities, the school facilities and Casper College, will expend $327 million in the Casper area. Don't have any figures, but having lived and worked in Wyoming all my life, that's a lot of money in one town. And I do believe that we would see inflated costs to have all the work done by Wyoming residents or to be able to comply to the 70-30 law is questionable.
What about, how come, and we'll talk more about that, I guess, Madam Chair, but how come the governor, and maybe you can't speak for him, but how come the department through the governor, how come you cut the rest of the construction projects that the select committee approved? You know, as you look, you know, and we...
What page are you looking at, Harsh?
Well...
You know more than us. You got to tell us what page you're looking at.
You know, the best handout I have is from Matt Wilmarth, but I think it's in your information, too. You had that... I just go down them. Do you have it right in front of you? Page 11?
Yes. If you go to page 11, you have the schools that were dropped.
Let me just get there to make sure I'm looking at the same thing you're looking at.
Under construction.
Boy. Now, so the committee, and there's some other changes in design, but members, this is just the construction part of the budget, and you can see the select committee approved Laramie High School, Shoshone K-12, Coffeen Elementary in Sheridan, Evanston Middle School, Wyoming Indian Elementary School, Midwest, must be K-12, and then the Cary Junior High Master Plan. And then those were dropped. Is there, did you just, why was that? I mean, we'd kind of indicated that we would, commitment to Natrona County, and we supported that, we knew it was going to be an additional $80 to $125 million. Did the governor just feel uneasy with that, or?
Madam Chair, Representative Harshman, I can't speak for the governor. What I can say, I believe, is that he wanted to keep this budget at about $400 million, and that's the figure that he had in mind and worked to. So how the decision was made, I can't speak for the governor.
Mr. Jones, would you...
How do you come up with the 400?
Senator Nicholas, I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, over the lifetime of this agency, our annual budgets have averaged about $389 million.
No, I understand that, but how do you calculate them? Let's go back to your total budget. Where do you come up with the 400? You're talking about total 400 with major maintenance.
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, that's correct. If you look at page, I believe it's 8.
I see that now on page 2C. My understanding was is that generally we thought we had about $400 million worth of construction capacity in the state without including major maintenance. Is the 400 that we had talked about in years past of being our capacity, does that include major maintenance, or do you have an opinion?
Senator Nicholas, I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Senator Nicholas, I guess I don't really have a good feel for what the state capacity is. I based my request on past budgets, and I understood that there was a wish to expend $150 to $200 million a year of construction.
Let me tell you what my recollection is. But I'm just looking at it. Yeah, if you look at, you're right, I mean, fiscal year 13 and 14, we those add up to about $401 million.
Mm-hmm.
But fiscal year 14, we brought it up to about that 200. We were at 168 because in 13, we knocked it down to 69 because we had, that was the year that we got, we had a real hit to our resources. And we had dropped it. So had it not been for that year, we'd have been about another 100 there. That was just a fiscal anomaly that we couldn't do. And so we would have been closer to 500 for the biennium. And I thought we did do analysis out there just looking at what is our construction capacity out there without... And what we meant was a capacity that you could hit a certain level, our Wyoming contractors could satisfy it, and you wouldn't see construction inflation. And that meant spread out over the state. We need to have that discussion. But as a general idea, the 400 I thought was a target for just capital construction projects and not the major. Maybe I'm wrong.
Go ahead, Ian.
Madam Chair, my understanding, Senator Nicholas, is that the wish was to maintain construction about $150 to $200 million per year.
Okay.
And I wanted to just ask Mr. Jones if he had any further comments on the earlier part of the conversation.
Madam Chairman, my understanding is exactly as Ian has shared with you.
It's by
but that
10.
Would get that would go three that 300 to 400. Well, wait a minute. When you said Capcom, when I hear Capcom, I'm thinking about excluding major maintenance, but you're including major maintenance.
Yes.
And I agreed with the 150 to 200, but I was always thought that major maintenance was outside that. But it doesn't make a difference. I mean, the question is what's a reasonable capacity to be out there and what can we do? I mean, we'll talk about that. Ian, I'd like you to think about it a little bit in terms of, you know, just conferring, looking out, talk to contractors. Give us some ideas about what you think is an appropriate level of capital construction for schools that we can supply. I do want to, before we leave, I do want to get back to the issue with respect to Casper because, you know, Steve, I hear what you're saying, but I also hear, I mean, if we fund your, the, if you go back to page 39, we commit to the 259 to get Casper done. In the end, you don't have to do the schools together, and if it's, and if you ended up with a bunch of inflation because of it, when you add that into our other construction, that wouldn't be a good deal, and I think you would agree with that. So, I mean, I know you want to protect your projects, but if they're staggered out, what do you care as long as we're committed to them?
Well, I don't know that that's the issue. I guess a lot of this stuff has been decided, I think, and really hasn't even been any design work done. Designers right. haven't even figured it out. We met and twice, I think, actually once in the building team. So I think yeah. a lot of this, I guess my idea is that whether we fund the Casper and then the other, whatever it was, $80 million in projects that were pulled off this budget, to me, I think that it's no difference than if we leave it in the CapCon holding account or we put it towards these projects on the list. To me, that doesn't matter. Some of them might get delayed for other reasons. They might get design might push them out farther. I'm not really worried about that. I just want to make sure we work the list and fulfill the list and kind of decide the rest of the
okay,
stuff
I'm
later.
Okay, I'm okay with that. But are you okay with the idea that, look, somebody with expertise is going to have to make the call as to whether or not that community can absorb it, and you've got your own contractors in Casper, and you know as well as
sure.
I do that Ian's exactly right. If you build all this
well,
up...
Well, I think that's debatable. The contractors I've talked to that represent those contracting firms, too, and they talk about construction as continually either a phase up or a phase down, and the idea you don't want is the drop off the cliff or the massive jump up. But the guy that I talked to, who's everybody knows here, but... It's like, hey, we got $1 billion in transmission projects. We got another $1 billion in wind farms. I mean, there's work going on. This is not the biggest project in the whole state, and
well,
so there's a lot of work.
Well,
and,
I mean, but those
so I don't know that that's a
built, they've built us a pretty penny on occasion. To
oh yeah, but
and we don't.
Yeah, I don't
want
think
that.
That's an issue to get that I want to. I think we're getting bogged down right now. I just want to figure out kind of. Why some were left on, some were taken off, why some were given a little planning, why the design work
little,
was pulled
am,
back.
Now, I'm trying to assess a little bit what your end game is. If your end game is to get a commitment on the facilities and the type, we'll get there. If your end game is that you want to commit us to building all of those together with the Gateway project and all at the same time, then I want to have more of a discussion. But if you say, look, as long as we've got a commitment, and we let Ian's shop figure out what is staging contracts out. Do you care about whether they're staged out over a year or two?
Well, I think it's a bigger discussion than just me, but
I
care
so.
About it. I mean,
I think
our community is probably, there's probably no community in Wyoming that's been more involved in the project than this one, than Casper. And it's
okay.
a pretty big deal.
And
so.
Before we depart, we've got Ms. Hill here, and she would like to make a comment. So. Here, we need a speaker. Thanks. Mary Kay Hill.
Thank you, Mary Kay Hill, Governor Mead's office, his education policy advisor. The beauty of listening on your computer on a Friday afternoon.
So it's working.
When a question is asked, it's heard. And Ian was gracious and not wanting to overstate the governor's position. So I'm pleased here to answer Representative Harshman's question of what was the governor's thinking in his bottom line recommendation. And I attend all the meetings as his representative, and in the Select Committee on School Facilities meeting regarding the budget, the discussion came up about the impact of the Casper High School remedies and the fact that those remedies were not profiled in the budget that the committee had considered. So the committee, by separate motion, as Representative Harshman has explained, did indicate their support for an additional range of funding. So what comes down to the governor is the $400 million budget, which was endorsed by the committee, and an additional $100 to $125 million range for Casper. And so the answer is really very simple. It was that Governor Mead was not comfortable endorsing a $530 $30 million construction budget. So he went back to past numbers, to past ranges, and arrived at that $403 million figure for the total agency budget, and then directed the staff to prepare then the companion budgets that reflect that number. So you've got a construction budget, planning budget, design budget, all of those.
All right, let me ask you this. I mean, let's just say Casper, if I look at page 39, I see that there is a $259 million total bill for that project. Is that right, Ian, up on the upper left corner?
Madam Chair and Senator Nicholas, what you're referring to on page 39 is the original cost estimate done by the project architects. I would rather refer you to page 40, which represents, yes, sir, which represents three scenarios, but the one that, and it's not exactly Fanning and Howie's scenario 2B that the commission recommended, but you can see the total costs represented there are approximately $236 million. With the understanding, Madam Chair and Senator Nicholas, this is from a 30,000-foot view. And
But let's use $200 million as
yes, sir.
Just an easy number, okay?
Okay.
When we turn back over to page 11, how much is profiled? And, I mean, I know you have, this includes planning, you got other dollars, but how much have you actually got put into the project, into your budget?
Madam Chair and Senator Nicholas, in the governor's recommendation, there is approximately $108 million from previous bieniums, and in this biennium, there is $126 million.
Okay. So that gets you to the 200 number.
Yes, yeah. Sir.
So it's there.
In this budget, yes, sir.
All right. Now, as we go forward to next week, and just give me a moment to discuss this, folks. We changed our policy for facilities over the last year. And what we were doing is trying to avoid the Sheridan situation where in previous years we were saying, look, here's our construction staging. Kind of like the discussion we had today with the schools, that is, if you know you're going to have multiple year projects, what was happening is we said, okay, let's figure out what we're going to spend in this year, and then spend in this year, and then spend in this year, and projects were getting broken up. And we hit a situation where Sheridan got broken up. Because part of it was in one fiscal cycle and one was in another fiscal cycle. And then the methodology changed. And Sheridan came up back and said, wait a minute. We're in the middle of construction. You've changed the methodology and our new dollars aren't coming at us. And we committed ourselves to say we're never going to do that again. Once we take a project, we're going to commit the funding for the project, and it will sit there until it's spent, whether it takes 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, 6 years. So the dollars that we commit do not reflect when they're going to get spent for construction. And we're not marrying up the right concepts. If we commit to $200 million to the Casper solution because that's the project. Then there's another discussion is when do they go? Will they go in this biennium and the next biennium? And, Ian, you're making a pretty good statement that said, look, don't figure that we're going to do them together. We'll commit the funding to the project, the $200, so they know they're going to go. And then the question is you have to work out the details, which does affect the background construction, such as what's going on the Gateway project, what's going on these other things, that's all fair. But in that sense,
you need to have more projects lined up, because it may be that you don't go for the $200 million. For, I mean, all that $200 million is not going to go next year. And so if you don't have other projects lined up and committed, you may not be able to hit your $150. So if, what I'm saying is if you've got exactly $150 million worth of projects designed to go up into a biennium that you know you're not going to hit, you've got to have more projects ready to go. And this isn't an issue where we don't have resources. We have some resources to commit to it. So I guess the discussion is, why don't we commit more resources and then have the discussion about what's the design, what's the construction schedule for the ones that we've committed to?
Madam Chair and Senator Nicholas, these are conversations that you and I have had before. And I believe the staff has provided to Madam Chairman and yourself specifically a graph that's a little bit bigger than this one, so he can actually read it. I apologize for that. But in your documents there, Senator Nicholas, there should be a large graph which...
Yep, it's 137, Ian, in committee.
Senator Nicholas, and we can provide that, but I didn't want I didn't
don't
want
spoil him.
I didn't want to print off 40. I didn't want to print off 40
oh,
of those
look at that,
for you.
Bill, that's the one you wanted.
Wait a minute, wait a minute.
How come you didn't get that one?
I'm gonna trade you right here. You're a young man.
I'll ask Art. I had a question, Director Cattelier. Is this document online somewhere? Or are we going to see that? Or wow, I can't see it. But.
Madam Chair, Representative Harshman, that is not online. We handed out a very similar document to you at the Select Committee.
Yes.
This has been updated somewhat.
And Ian, with all the documents that you've provided to us, you know, we're putting them in a special file. If you could electronically get those sent over to us in the next few days, that would be great. So,
Madam Chair, we tried to do that. This document is so huge. It's very
okay.
difficult.
So you just
but
need
will,
to bring it on
try.
On a drive or something. Maybe just bring it Monday or Tuesday to us on a drive, and we'll just load it. Can we do it that way?
Yes, yes, ma'am.
Rather than doing an electronic submission. Okay.
Yes, ma'am, we can do that.
Great. And
I see that,
Senator Nicholas. And the one comment I did want to make before we leave today is that, you know, we did work really hard on the index, and the integrity of that is very important to me. And so I do want to make sure that we have a good conversation on this before next week is over. So thank you very much.
Madam Chair, I if I could just comment a little bit further, because there are some considerations about that index. And it hinges upon the capacity studies that we are charged yet to complete. We have taken the best information we have to understand schools with capacities, but there will be some, and with the, I believe it's 2115-117E, charges us to study capacity and prioritize them. So what I'm trying to say in a roundabout way is there may be some changes to this needs list based on capacity studies. But, however, this list here was developed off of our 2011 list, and it goes 4 years out. And so we have tried to project what happens when so that we don't hit the lull that Senator Nicholas was referring to.
Right, and I think that probably Co-Chairman Harshman on Select Facilities is the best answer to this, but isn't that what we were trying and striving to do, that we knew there would be some fluid movement in the index based on that?
There is, and I think, Madam Chair, because in the past you had capacity issues that were hidden either by a condition score or a functionality report. And so we wanted to make sure that particularly we've got some areas of the state growing quickly. The rest of the state's pretty stable. You couldn't tell that in the old major very well. We ran into that in Douglas and other places, Campbell County and others. So, but that's going to come alive here, and that's really some of these issues we got to talk about. This list is probably a short-term list, this 2011,
because you're going to measure all the buildings in the state again, which hadn't been done in a decade. Those are issues this committee needs to know about. You're going to measure them all. According to the statute, get another baseline. Hasn't been done really since MGT days, probably, if I can state that right. And this list will roll again. And then it'll be a pretty steady list for a lot of years, I would guess. But we've had a pretty steady list. This one was new this year, and we're working it because we just work what we have. But the thing we've tried to always do is once you kind of get in the queue, we're not going to be like the old days where you're on, you're off, you're on, you're off. And
or currently.
What's that?
Or currently.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, so
Mr.
that's
Cavalier,
kind of the, that's been the way we've tried to operate business. Now, the other deal, I tell you, we're tasked, and there's a lot of talk about contractors, but the real issue, and you read the Supreme Court opinion in Campbell 4, chastised the department for really moving too slow. This deal's about getting students in facilities. The court bemoaned how, regretted how students have been in poor facilities for too long because of bureaucrats and legislators and everybody talk, and no action. And so that's part of this, too, this whole discussion, make sure we don't get bogged down in the weeds and get moving.
Well,
we got kids out there, a whole cycle of kids going through.
I'll respond to that, and that's this. The truthfully, our facilities aren't that bad,
right,
and we've got good facilities, and we could live with them longer. Having said that, the state's now responsible for doing the capital construction statewide. And if we hit everything at a pace that we can afford and we can move along, we keep our contractors busy.
Yeah.
We get our inventory of backlogs taken care of. And we know that if your buildings are scheduled to be 50 years, they'll get replaced in 50 years. So I don't find it that compelling to say that we have to do Casper, Natrona, because students learning and suffering. I think your students are probably doing just fine. I've been there, and you guys are great teachers, and you're doing it. Now, are they next on the list? Yeah. But don't tell me that, you know, I don't buy the fact that the Constitution, our forefathers said that they had to have a brand new building. Just my speaking.
I didn't say that.
Now,
the court said that.
Back to Ian's question.
Yeah.
Back to Ian.
Nice job, though.
The question is, Ian, if you're to stagger the Natrona projects because you think that for any variety of reasons, do you need to have a couple other projects ready to go to hit your 150 mark?
Ian.
Madam Chair and Senator Nicholas, this is what the graph in our expenditure rate here shows. You'll see some peaks out there at 14, 15, and that is the Natrona projects, Kelly Walsh and CAPS ending and Natrona kicking off. So we have tried to look at this so we have an even expenditure rate, and this chart does show Natrona being built in 15, 16.
Okay. When you distill all this, do you have enough projects in the pipeline, or do you need to have some more pipeline projects?
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, I believe that we do, but let us come back and assure that that is the case. I believe that that is the case. We tried to, and that's why we gave the representation of the bar graph there. You see some peaks, but we tried to level it out as much as we could to keep that expenditure rate at about $10 to $12 million a month.
Okay.
Madam Chair, why would you delay the Casper project and then add more projects around the state? I mean, it's the same issue. And now we're talking about Wyoming contractors that move all over the place.
Madam Chair, we didn't add more projects. This is our 2000 list.
No, that was the question, though. That's what I'm asking.
This is our 2011 list.
Yeah.
And our thought with this list was to get the schools built as quickly as possible.
Yes.
And understanding what needed to take place, planning and land acquisitions on each project, we gave our best forecast of when these projects might occur.
Madam Chairman, one of the things I do want to also always be cognizant of is that
we talk about Wyoming contractors as though that's the Wyoming worker, and that may or may not be the case.
Right.
And, you know, as I understand it, when you start doing projects of the scale of $80 million and you're going to have them bonded, a lot of the Wyoming contractors may not even be able to bond those, and you maybe end up having some of these firms you see over in Laramie on the campus come in and build and bond them because or be winning this or succeeding on those because they have better bonding capacity. And in this analysis, if you're looking at the Casper worker, for example, that Casper worker would prefer to have big construction projects, no matter what which contractor he's working for, and he'd rather know he's got 5 years of work instead of having to bring in workers from out of town. And we always have to remember, and I know that we all think about that, the worker is a different deal than the contractor. Mm-hmm. And trying to make sure that our workers have work in areas is important. And I assume that you take that into consideration, too, or are we just trying to figure out whether or not a Wyoming contractor can successfully bid and where he gets his workers is his own problem business?
Madam Chair and Senator Nicholas, I believe I understand your trend of thought there. Currently, we will be auditing projects before they are closed out to understand that if the general was a resident, that 70% of his contract went to Wyoming residents. So, but whether those residents then hire out-of-state laborers really is controlled by the Department of Labor, which is at Workforce Services now. So they do have that requirement to hire Wyoming workers first, as I understand it. Does that mean there are 70% Wyoming workers on the job site? It may not.
My only point there, Madam Chairman, is if we put too much work in one community at one time, it might be a Wyoming contractor, but it may be a bunch of out-of-state workers getting the work done. And if we stretch the work out, it's a greater chance that we have Wyoming workers continuously employed. I mean, in my community, it makes a big difference. You bring in two or three big projects, and the likelihood is even if they're Wyoming contractors, all those workers have green license plates and they come up here because there's no workforce. Maybe in Casper you have plenty of workforce to absorb everything, but you need to think about that.
Ian, before we depart here today, are there any questions you have of us to help direct you for your responses for next week?
Madam Chair, my staff is very good about taking notes. They will have captured everything that you requested today, and we will bring that back. I can't think of any offhand.
Okay.
There are, as Representative Harshman said, a lot of considerations, the assessment capacity, those things.
Good. And great. Well, thank you, committee. Thank you, Mr. Cattelier and school facilities. We will start Monday morning at 9 a.m. with the Department of Corrections. Wishing you all safe travels and a good weekend.